Good evening. The town clerk informs me that we have a quorum, and I hereby call this meeting to order. My name is Kate Blake, and it is my honor to serve as your moderator for the third night of this 2022 annual town meeting. Before we get started, a couple of very brief reminders. Everyone must be in a seat. We cannot be standing in the aisles or at their seat unless they've been called to speak upon. I think everybody is familiar with where the fire exits are. We also have designated mask expected seating, same as the last two nights. I will also not be repeating my opening comments about procedural matters. If you need a refresher, please consult your warrant. A big thank you to Girl Scouts who were able to scrounge up some Mike's runners for us tonight. We have Charlotte Huettner, Penny Ryan, Elizabeth Huettner, Kaylee Gothy. As with the last two nights, we have voters who are also in the Rogers Theater, so I will need to determine the vote there from my assistant moderators before I can announce the result. If you wish to be heard on any article, please hold up your card and wait to be recognized. We have fewer scouts running the mics tonight, so we also have two standing mics both on the floor on either side as well as up in the balcony on either side. And if you wish to speak, you can make your way there. That will help me easily identify who wishes to be speaking. If you are wearing a mask when you approach the microphone, I've been asked by Sudbury TV to request that you leave your mask on. It helps with enunciation and making sure that they don't have to spend a lot of time cleaning those mics afterwards. Finally, I have been made aware that the proponents of Article 57 will be moving to indefinitely postpone that article. This means that we have 14 remaining articles. I have received a few motions to amend on a few articles. It is my hope and intention that we conclude tonight. In order to do so, I am requesting that discussion is kept brief, and I will be limiting speakers to 2 minutes instead of 5 minutes. Please try to make your comments concise. In order to conclude tonight, it may be necessary to vote to continue past 10:30. Also, in the interest of concluding tonight, is there any objection with foregoing presentations for each article? At least six of the article presentations tonight are scheduled to be the pre-recorded videos. These have been available online for some time. I have discussed this with Town Council, who advises me we can dispense with presentation. Staff will be available to answer any questions that might arise. Any objection to that? Yes? We got to get a microphone to you.
Yael Kupiat-Star, 77 Hemlock Road. I'm sorry I'm out of breath. I just walked in. Are you suggesting not having any presentations for any of the remaining articles?
That is what I'm suggesting.
I object because I happen to personally know people that have put a lot of time and effort into their presentation for Article 58, including my daughter, who's on the Environmental Club.
Since there is an objection, I will ask at each article if there's anybody who wishes to hear the presentation, and we will take it one by one. And with that, we will move on to Article 30. Nope. Yep. Mr. Surratt, please.
When people have substantive issues to discuss, I would hope you'd be more flexible than 2 minutes if the speaker is giving arguments that are cogent and not repetitive.
We will deal with that when we have to. Article 30, motion by Chair Roberts.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. Does anybody wish to see the pre-recorded video presentation on Article 30? You wish to see it? Okay. Can you please play that, Mr. Thompson?
Hello, I'm Justin Finnicum with the Sudbury Planning Board. I'm here today to present Article 30 of the town meeting warrant, which is a proposal to amend zoning bylaw Article 9 by inserting Section 2328 regarding fences. The current regulation of fences in Sudbury is under the jurisdiction of the state's building code, which only requires a building permit for a fence over a certain height. It's currently difficult to ensure safe sight lines are maintained and appropriate materials are used for the installation of new fences around town. The purpose of the new fence section of the zoning bylaw is to regulate the height, locations, and certain types of fencing throughout the community. The intent of the proposed section is to ensure that the fabric, harmony, and character of existing residential neighborhoods and landscapes are maintained, while at the same time providing residents the ability to erect appropriate fences for privacy and security purposes. The proposed bylaw amendment supports safety in our community by helping to reduce potential sightline issues, especially at intersections and driveways, which can create hazardous situations for drivers, pedestrians, and cyclists. Here are a few highlights of the proposed bylaw amendment. Residential zoning districts, fences shall be no greater than 6 feet in height. Fences greater than 6 feet, but no greater than 8 feet, shall require a special permit from the Zoning Board of Appeals. In residential zoning districts, chain link fence shall not be permissible along front lot lines. Wood, vinyl, and other similar durable materials are allowed in all residential locations. In business, industrial, and research zoning districts throughout town, taller fences are allowed, but they shall not obscure visibility near driveways, intersections, walkways, streets, or bicycle paths. In all zoning districts, fences within 20 feet of the edge of pavement shall not exceed 3 feet in height unless a special permit is obtained from the Zoning Board of Appeals. And finally, exceptions in certain circumstances can also be pursued with only the need to obtain a special permit from the Zoning Board of Appeals. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Select Board for a report.
The Select Board supports 5-0.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 30? If you want to just make your way to the standing microphone, Mr. Abrams. Keep talking.
All right. Well, there we go. All right. I have a couple of questions.
Your name and address, please.
Robert Abrams, 161 Knobscot Road. A couple of questions about the bylaw. I'm curious about the extent that the bylaw will apply to the town of Sudbury itself as a landowner if and when the town wants to build any fences. And I'm also curious the extent to which it will apply to the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail, to the extent that they may or may not want to erect any fences in conjunction with the rail trail construction. And I think it's important for the hall to know and understand the answers to these questions when later in the meeting we deal with voting on the rail trail itself. We've seen a lot of proposals relating to the rail trail which suggest that there are going to be fences here and there or walls here and there to expedite the use of the trail itself. Will the bylaw apply to that? And when we vote on the rail trail, will we know and understand that things that we thought were going to happen about fencing will in fact be able to happen under this bylaw? Thank you.
Mr. Hayes, can you answer that question?
I'll defer to Adam DeShano, Planning Director.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Adam DeShano, Director of Planning and Community Development. I'll try to cover those questions. If I miss something, please let me know. So one of the questions was whether the town's fences on town property would be applicable to this bylaw. And yes, that is correct. The town would be required to go through the various permitting processes as specified in the proposed bylaw. I believe the other question was regarding the rail trails and the applicability of those. The bylaw would also apply in those instances. The rail trail would not be treated as a roadway. It would be treated as, because no cars are allowed on the rail trail, so they'd be treated just like any other adjacent property. Right now, the only fences being proposed along the ones along the Bruce Freeman rail trail are the split rail fences at this time, but those would need to comply with this bylaw as well. I believe that covered the nature of the questions, but please let me know if I missed something.
Thank you. Can we have somebody in the front corner bring the microphone?
Thank you. Raymond Brady, 648 Boston Post Road. We're beside Sudbury Pines and the funeral home. It's a residentially zoned off Route 20. If you go to Part D of Section 30 there and take a look, you said that the edge of the pavement, 20 foot in, that parking lot is attracting overnight parking of tractor trailers, and the frontage there is a residential frontage. That's not a commercial frontage. So that putting a 3 foot fence, thinking that that's okay along Route 20, it's not like Hudson Road, for example, or Dutton Road, where most of the traffic is residents or friends of residents. Route 20, you don't know who's there, the strangers, predators, whatever. You don't know who's there. And when that parking lot is attracting tractor trailers, we don't know whether that's a good driver or who he is or what he is, his background. So a 3 foot fence is ridiculous there along Route 20. And if you look, for example, King Philip Road, just up around Landon Road off Route 20, 4 foot in from Route 20, there's a 6 foot fence there. So what are you going to do there? That's a backyard of a family. So are you saying from now on you're setting a precedent that it's going to be 3 foot? It's a bit, you know, scary.
So the bylaw does call for within 20 feet of a roadway that fences shall only be 3 feet in height. The planning board had extensive discussion about this, and it's primarily surrounded around visibility of vehicles trying to get to and from roadways. And we felt that, the board felt that that was a public safety issue, directing visibility. 20 feet back from the roadway, 20 feet back from the edge of pavement, the fences can go up from there in height in terms of security purposes. 20 feet isn't all that far. It's probably the length of this table at the front of the room, maybe a little bit more. So we felt that those provisions, the board felt that those provisions were adequate and reasonable.
Could you please bring the microphone to the back? Thank you.
Steve Green, 360 Elaine Road. I feel this article needs to be reworked. I think it's an overreach. One example that bothers me particularly is that in order for a fence to be on the border between two properties, both owners have to agree it has to be a co-fence. Fences are generally erected as markers for property boundaries. Whether or not both people agree. Fences do make good neighbors also. There are some other provisions here that I think, I just feel strongly that the article needs to be reworked a little bit. The great obstructions on corners in this town is vegetation. I drive all over this town. I can't see how to get out of roads. It's trees, it's vegetation. DPW stopped trimming years ago because of the fact that they got such complaints from the homeowners. So they stopped cutting down all that. You can't see. I have cleared for 40 years the end of Longfellow and 117. I'm sorry, Ford Road and 117 to the left and the right. Trees, vegetation. The fences, and all over this town, I don't see the fences as a problem. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody in the balcony? Okay. If you want to just make, yep, the Girl Scouts right behind you on the left side.
Jennifer Pincus, 25 Blueberry Hill Lane. I agree with everything that was just said, and I think that we do need to relook at some of the wording, especially in the 20-foot, 3-foot height issue. There's quite a bit of fences that are on smaller properties that if you have to put it 20 feet off the road, it would be in the middle of the front yard. And while I agree that we need to have this new part of the bylaw. I think it needs to be relooked at. The bigger issue isn't necessarily the height of the fence all the way across the front of a yard, but it might be a certain distance away from the driveway, for example, that would be a sightline issue. But on the other side of the property, it's not going to be a sightline issue. So I think we need to rework it a little bit more.
Did the gentleman next to you want to say anything, or was, can you just pass the microphone over there too, please?
Michael Pincus, 25 Blueberry Hill Lane. Paragraph A, I just want to make sure I understand this. So fences under 6 feet in height are fine. Fences between 6 and 8 feet in height need a special permit. What seems to be missing is what happens with fences over 8 feet.
Can you please answer that question?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Moderator. Fences over 8 feet in height would require a variance from the Zoning Board of Appeals in order to be erected.
Okay. Mr. Surratt?
Surratt, 58 Longfellow Road. Reading Articles 30 and 31 has made me rethink the definition of a camel. I now believe the camel is a horse designed by a planner with too much time on his hands. Article 30 is an assault on all homeowners' rights to use their land and to protect it. This article would turn the entire town into one governed by a dreaded homeowners' association. While conformity and rigidity and restrictions might be appropriate in a historical district, they should not be, they are not appropriate for people who own their own homes and their own property. As Robert Frost wrote more than 100 years ago, good fences make good neighbors. Now, this 3-foot-high fence, if you've got a dog you're wanting to contain, I assume the planning board believes that all dogs are chihuahuas and shihtzus. Many dogs are able to leap a 3-foot hurdle without ruffling their fur. Now, these articles, Article 30 and 31, attack people's right to use and enjoy their property. But second, they expand the power and the costs of the town's already burdensome bureaucracy. They respect the manifestation of the dreaded three P's. A bureaucracy's true mission is to preserve, protect, and procreate its budget and its power. One of the reasons why the town's budget exceeds $100 million is the passage of bylaws that expand the bureaucracy needlessly. In addition to the direct costs of funding the bureaucracy, people needing to apply for special permits would incur architectural, legal, and other technical costs to go through the process. This is not an insubstantial matter if you're going to try and build a significant fence. You may spend several thousand dollars on a surveyor and lawyer and for legal fees. Now, Article 30 would regulate every fence in town, would require a special permit for the planning board. It has no place for single-family homes in Sudbury. If a homeowner lives on a busy road...
Can you conclude in the next 20 seconds, please?
May I have 1 minute?
1 minute.
If a homeowner lives on a busy road and they want to put up a fence to protect their property from the noise of the highway or from lights of cars going by, they have to go through this silly permit. Now, if I could afford one of those lovely fences that has the cast iron grills and the gilded tops that are 15 feet tall in my neighborhood in Newport, I'd love to have it. Now, last point. As a lawyer, I have a certain affinity for schemes that force people to pay lots of legal fees. That's how I made my living. But I doubt the wisdom of forcing our residents to incur legal fees just to be able to build or modify a fence. The appellate process involved in a ZBA matter takes you to the Superior Court. So let's assume somebody gets a permit to build a fence, and a neighbor or an abutter within 100 feet wants to challenge it, they can take it to the Superior Court, where the parties at issue will expend legal fees of at least 20 and as much as 100,000 or more adjudicating it. That's not an idle threat. I've handled several matters where that has been the fate of a dispute.
And there's your 1 minute.
Well, then let me just end by saying I urge you to defeat this article unanimously.
Okay. Does the planning board wish to be heard on this?
Sure.
You need a microphone. You can come to the podium, yep.
Steve Garvin, 26 Bowditch Road, Chairman of the Planning Board. A few matters of clarification. One, so people understand, it's a state law if you put a fence on a common property line that both homeowners have to approve it. So that's nothing new to Sudbury. as far as some of the questions regarding bylaws, there are fence bylaws currently in Concord, Wayland, Weston, Marlborough, and Framingham. Each has one regarding fencing, but not necessarily all to the equal height. One thing that understands is 6 feet is a pretty common theme for height. 6 foot is secure and private. 8 feet tends to be on a high side, but is allowable. There are no fees being looked to be charged for this. It is more a matter from listening to everyone for the master plan of keeping the rural character and keeping the safety. 3 feet is basically the height of site distance. As a civil engineer, when you design anything, you need to be able to show that there's a 3 foot distance in height for each way you look left or right, depending on the speed limit of the road. This was put in place to allow and preserve there to be some controls, as there are none currently for the town, to protect its citizens. Okay? You can put it within 20 feet. It's just that within 20 feet, it can't be more than 3 feet in height. There are exceptions that are to be allowed. There are always going to be exceptions to everything that happens. The idea is to give the town and its townspeople more control. This is not an uncommon bylaw whatsoever. It's all throughout the Commonwealth. There are not appeals throughout the Commonwealth to this, holding this up. This is not a Superior Court issue. This is simply the Planning Board looking at what else has gone on and listening to its citizens talking about protecting its rural character from the master plan. We held multiple hearings and did get feedback from multiple people, and that's what helped craft this, in addition to looking at bylaws from other parts of the country and all throughout the state.
That would be 2 minutes. Does anybody wish to be heard in favor of this besides the Planning Board? You have a question? Yes. Microphone.
Thank you. Sarah Troiano, 342 Lincoln Road. My question is about people that currently have fences on their property that does not meet the guidelines of the new bylaw. I'm wondering how those families and residents will be handled, i.e., will there be some kind of grandfather clause so that they can retain the fence that they've already invested in, and upon needing a repair to such a fence, will they be permitted to maintain what they have? I would hate to have a new bylaw put an undue hardship on citizens that have already invested in a fence on their property.
Mr. Tagazdu?
Sure. Thank you. So Section L of the proposed bylaw indicates that pre-existing fences erected prior to the date of this section came into effect are permitted to be maintained but not expanded or altered unless a special permit's obtained from the Zoning Board of Appeals. So those pre-existing fences would be allowed to be maintained, repaired, and even replaced so long as they're replaced with exactly the same material, sort of one for one, so to speak.
So I'm going to move on to calling the question. The quantum of vote required for passage is 2/3. All. Did you have a question or a comment?
I don't. I do have a comment that's different than what other people have.
This will be the last one. Please state your name and address.
Siobhan Hollinger, 55 Washington Drive. I do think that we need a fencing part of our zoning bylaws. So I'm not absolutely opposed to adding a fencing bylaw. I think that right out of the gate that the language in this bylaw is actually not consistent with our current bylaws. We have words like roadways. We don't define roadways in our zoning bylaws. We define street. So when you have now you have a different term in there. And the question is, who determined what the language was to be in this article, number one? Number two is, we have a definition of fence. Now, anybody who has an invisible dog fence, an electric fence, that is a electric current that provides an obstruction. It isn't defined whether or not that in and of itself isn't covered under here. So would you have to, any time that you need to alter that invisible fence, or any time somebody gets a puppy and they want to install the invisible dog fence, now do they have to go through this whole process? Another item I would like to address that came up when the planning board individual was speaking is I live in a neighborhood that's off of Route 20, and the businesses that border our neighborhood have, you know, the lower end, the 6-foot fence. And I don't think people appreciate the amount of debris and stuff that comes off of Route 20 with the 18-wheelers and trash trucks that are out there. We have wetlands, and we're constantly trying to clean up the wetlands that are beyond that, in addition to our own properties. I think that's probably it for now. But I do think that I would like to see this article either withdrawn or defeated and come back with something that's less restrictive and has language that's more in line with current zoning bylaws.
Mr. DeCagney, did you want to answer any of those questions before we have a vote?
Yes, I would, just very quickly. Thank you, if I may. So there was a question about the language. So the language of the proposed zoning bylaw was developed with the planning board and town staff, also input from the public at the hearings and meetings where this conversations took place, and also with input from the town's building inspector. And an electric fence would not apply, also known as an invisible fence. It does not meet the definition of fence as proposed in the warrant, so that would not apply in that instance.
Okay. Well, nope. You've already had your 2 minutes. You're not being recognized to speak. We're going to move on to the vote. The quantum of vote required for Article 30 is 2/3. All in favor, please raise your cards. Thank you. All opposed, please raise your cards. Thank you. Article 30 does not pass. Article 31, motion by Chair Roberts.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. Does anybody wish to hear the presentation, which is going to be a playing of the pre-recorded video for Article 31? Okay, there is a hand. Please replay the presentation for Article 31.
Hi, I'm Stephen Garvin, the chairman of the Sudbury Planning Board. I'm here to present the Article 31, which is to amend the general bylaws, Article B-F of stormwater management. The history of the stormwater bylaw is that the bylaw was adopted in 2009 in response to federal and state mandates for enhanced environmental protection of surface and groundwater supplies. 2012, after 2 years of implementation, town meeting approved modifications to the bylaw proposed by the planning board to revise provisions in the bylaw to be less restrictive on single-family homeowners and small projects and to streamline the permitting process without sacrificing environmental quality. Now that we're in 2022 at this year's annual town meeting, we seek minor modifications to the bylaw to bring it into compliance with the latest versions of the state and federal requirements. The purpose of the bylaw is to protect and maintain and enhance public health, safety, and environment and the general welfare of the town by establishing minimum requirements and procedures to control the adverse effects of soil erosion and sedimentation, construction site runoff, increased post-development stormwater runoff, and non-point source pollution associated with new development and redevelopment. Ultimately, what the planning board and the town is looking to do is to have proper management of stormwater runoff that reduces damage to public and private property. It helps safeguard our public health and safety. It adds resiliency to our town systems and protects drinking water supplies and natural resources. The amendment to this general bylaw seeks compliance with the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System. It's commonly referred to as NEPDES. These general permits for stormwater discharge from small municipal separate storm sewer systems, or MS4, in Massachusetts. Per the US EPA permit issued to the town of Sudbury, Sudbury needs to update this bylaw and regulations in order to provide criteria for water quality beyond what is currently required in the Sudbury Stormwater Bylaw and Mass DEP standards. Basically, we seek a modification to the bylaw to bring it into compliance with the latest version of both state and federal requirements. The proposed modifications are three minor items. One is the change in definition to add the definition of the MS4 general permit and revised definition of impervious surfaces. Two is to change in the discussion of standards to add compliance with the MS4 general permit, which is required as part of said general permit issued to the town by the Mass DEP and the US EPA. And three, change the appeal process and shortening the duration of the appeal period. These modifications do not change the intent or purpose of the bylaw, but are meant to clarify and improve the bylaw's process to allow planning and applicants to have more flexibility in material selection in keeping with the character of the town and to administer this bylaw more efficiently for the town and the applicants, and finally, to ensure the bylaw complies with state and federal permit requirements. These revisions will enable the planning board to meet state and federal requirements and administer this bylaw more efficiently for the town and applicants. We urge your support. Thank you very much.
Does the select board have a report?
Select board support 5-0.
Thank you. Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 31? In the blue shirt in the front, please.
Hi, my name is Gary Napick. I'm at 208 Marlborough Road. I don't object to the intent of this proposal, but it's more about the process and the protections for property owners. I moved to Sudbury about 2 years ago to a house which already had a hard-packed dirt driveway, in other words, an impervious surface under the current definition. I wanted to simply pave that driveway with asphalt, have an asphalt driveway just like all my neighbors did. When this provision in the current law was invoked, and I was told, not by the planning board, but actually just by a lone engineer in the DPW, that I had to install a commercial-grade drainage system in order to simply pave my existing driveway. So under that process, I did not know that I even had an option to go before a board. And so in other words, this was just a unilateral decision by an individual engineer. Secondly, I directly asked the town about an appeals process, and I was met with silence. So I think there need to be some protections included in here. First of all, that if you are replacing one impervious surface with another, this should not apply, right? There should be no change, no reinterpretation, no revisiting of the drainage requirements. That seems like common sense. The other thing this does is sort of perplexingly, this actually defines pervious pavers and other modern materials that are actually designed to enhance drainage. It actually defines them as impervious surfaces, and that seems to rob homeowners of an important option that they would have in paving a surface, as opposed to giving them more flexibility. Lastly, I think that property owners should be informed that there is an appeals process so that if they disagree with the drainage system that is proposed as a result of this, that there is some avenue for appeal. Okay, thank you.
Anybody else on this article? Hold on 1 minute. Just looking to see if there's anybody else who hasn't spoken yet tonight. Okay, we'll do Mr. Abrams and then Mr. Surratt.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Robert Abrams, 161 Knobscot Road. I just listened to the previous speaker, and I'm reminded about when we first had it proposed by the Conservation Commission that we have a local town bylaw on stormwater management and this kind of thing. And what they proposed at that time was going to make 2,500 square feet of water a wetland. And at that town meeting, I noticed that the puddle at the end of my driveway was bigger than 2,500 square feet. And the way that it was written, my neighbor was going to have to go to Conservation Commission and get an order of conditions in order to fertilize his lawn because it was going to be within 100 feet of my wetland. And that attempt at a local bylaw was voted down by this town meeting. Now, listen to this fellow over here, and I'm thinking to myself, it's the same thing. He's got an impervious surface. He wants to replace it with what we call today pervious pavers, but he can't do that under this bylaw. I think that's a little bit too restrictive for this town, and I think we ought to vote it down. Thank you.
Okay. Could the Girl Scout bring it to Mr. Surratt, please?
Hank Surratt, 58 Longfellow Road. When I first read this proposed bylaw in the planning board hearing process, I concluded that the entire stormwater bylaw needed a poodle cut. To limit it to large projects like the North Sudbury Housing Project or the proposed commercial Mercedes dealership for Route 20. Because of the rule that amendments will stay within the four corners of an article, we'll have to wait till next year to try and take this thing back down to size. This article seems to have been written by either the Mad Hatter or Gilbert and Sullivan. By defining pervious pavement, pervious pavers, and dirt as impervious, I'm beginning to think of the Mikado. I've put it on my list. It never will be missed. Now, there's a procedural trap in this amendment. It changes the appeals process, shortening the appeal period and creating a trap for the unwary homeowner or lawyer. It makes the process of trying to deal with this as a judicial review much more cumbersome, much more complicated, and much more difficult to navigate. You know, I was talking earlier about legal fees. Land use lawyers who have the skill to handle these kinds of matters charge between $400 and $500 an hour. I don't think it's appropriate to cause homeowners to have to incur those kinds of legal fees just to put in a downspout.
Okay. Is there anybody who wants to speak in favor of this article? I will take one comment, and then we will move on to a vote. I'll take a question and one comment. So why don't we have the question first? The Girl Scout could bring you the microphone. Nope. I want to do the question first.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. I am wondering if this language that includes pervious...
Oh, your name and address, please.
Oh, Rebecca Cutting, 381 Manor Road. Includes pervious surfaces, pervious pavers. Is part of the MS4 language? Is this a federal requirement that we're looking at, or is this something that we came up with?
Would the planning board be able to answer that question? And then you can make your comment, and then we will have the vote.
I have a second one.
Sure. Why don't you ask the second question now?
Second question is, why did we strike compacted dirt surfaced roads with compacted dirt surfaces, which is much broader and could cause problems if somebody was going to do a terrace or put in a shed with a compacted dirt surface?
So, Mr. Garvin, if you can answer those two questions, and then you'll get 2 minutes to make your comment.
Sure. I'm not going to use any pithy comments, as others have, to help moving this along. So the first gentleman, to clarify for him, the current bylaw, as it stands, that if it is gravel or paved or anything of that nature, pavers, it counts as pavement. So you changing your driveway from gravel to a bituminous driveway would not trigger anything. It's all the same under the current. So you were given incorrect along that ways. So then, along the lines of the question that the lady just had, the current bylaw as it stands states that, which was passed in 2004, anything that is gravel, pavement, or anything like that, counts as pavement in the town of Sudbury. So if you were doing that, you would currently have to. What the current bylaw modification is trying to do is be able to have different requirements so that stormwater, gravel, actually can be counted. While it counts as impervious, it can actually show that it recharges quicker so that it would be an improvement. A good example that Mr. Surrett brought up was the Route 20 Mercedes dealership. Under the current regulations, they were going to put 40,000 square feet of pervious pavement in the back, and that would not count, and they would be able to do their entire development as a redevelopment by doing that. By stating that that is now included, it now meets new development and has to meet all the requirements. They still get credit for the fact that it's going to recharge quicker, but it doesn't allow them to sidestep the regulation and the permitting process. That's why that was added. And what this does is it gives the planning board and the town the ability to promote, as an example, we were just working on a horse farm on Wayside Inn Road, and we wanted them to use gravel, and they realized, according to the current regulations, it didn't matter if it was gravel or pavement, so they decided to use pavement. We couldn't encourage them to use gravel as we wanted to. That's what we're trying to do here. The last bit is a question about the appeals process. The appeals process is not changing at all. There's an existing appeals process. That means you have to wait 60 days to appeal. What we've done to try and help people move their projects along quicker is shorten it to 20 days. They have to go through the same process, whether they want to use a $400 attorney to appeal it, or a $500 attorney, or a $2 attorney, as I would be. I broke my own rule. They just can do it in 20 days as opposed to 60. All the other regulations, all the towns and our consultants have told us, are going to have to start to create these bylaws everywhere, because US EPA and MS4 are going to require phosphorus removal and the requirement of meeting a further TSS removal beyond the state. The state DEP is going to actually change all their regulations to meet that. So we're trying to make sure we're already in compliance and we're ahead of the game in that way.
So the quantum of vote required for passage of Article 31 is a majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. Thank you. All opposed, please raise your cards. Thank you. Okay. That passes by majority. Article 32, motion by Chair Roberts.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $200,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? There is. Does anybody wish to have the pre-recorded presentation on Article 32 played? Okay, please play the presentation.
Hello, I'm Bill Barletta, Combined Facilities Director for the Town of Sudbury. I'm here to present Article 32, Americans with Disabilities Act Transition Plan Recommendations, $200,000. Back in 2021, as part of the ongoing effort to assess the current level of Americans with Disabilities Act compliance and program services and activities and town-owned facilities, the town contracted the Institute for Human-Centered Design to prepare an ADA self-evaluation and transition plan on the town's behalf. Prior to 2021, the town had been turned down for two grants to fund this program. The town undertook the funding on its own to help facilitate and get this project moving. The self-evaluation and transition plan identified deficiencies, compiled a prioritized list of recommendations for corrective action, and provided associated costs. The associated costs are identified in the plan were a thumbnail and a guide and a magnitude of scale to identify how these projects relate to each other and a rough estimate of what it would cost to affect each recommendation. In all, the self-evaluation and transition plan for many key facilities are generally usable by people with disabilities, but not in full compliance with current accessibility requirements. In this article, is intended to provide funding to begin addressing identified recommendations in schools, town buildings, and public spaces. The transition plan and recommendations did identify items in schools, all SBS schools, all town buildings, and town open spaces and parks. Deficiencies identified in the self-evaluation and transition plan to be undertaken with this initial round of funding are items that affect people's immediate need in accessing public buildings and spaces. Those are the basic elements of the ADA Act, and they are the ability to enter facilities, navigate through a building or space, conduct their business as needed, and use the restroom. And the recommendations that identified those specifically were directed towards walkway repairs and modifications, compliant curb cuts, compliant signage deficiencies, and bathroom fixture modifications. Now, going back a little bit, the transition plan and recommendations totaled really in the millions for every single recommendation. The most difficult part of enacting the transition plan recommendations is organizing how that's to be gone about. Part of that plan involves collaboration with building staff that serve the public, the Commission on Disability, and the wider public. And the Commission on Disability was involved with the project, very enthusiastic supporters, very pleased that the Institute for Human-Centered Design was selected to perform the transition plan and provide the recommendations. They were at the kickoff meeting. They reviewed the recommendations, and they're very familiar with the process for enacting all of these. We also want to include the wider public. Addressing the full body of prioritized recommendations is really a multi-year process that requires ongoing effort and funding. The most important element of this article is that the funding will serve to establish a template to form a collaborative approach that is manageable, understandable, transparent, and plans for future work and is able to yield an achievable result. The plan is here with this initial round of funding. The group identified, public, Commission on Disability, and the staff that serves the public, be able to coalesce around this amount of money and the recommendations and begin to form a process, a group, and a plan to begin to address these and identify specifically which are most urgent. And that should not be a single person decision, should not be the facilities director or single town staff, but a collaborative approach. With that group in hand and these basic direction identified, they can then begin to identify specific items for addressing. At that point, the hope is that a more identifiable plan and a workable plan can be addressed once the group is in place and has had a chance to enact some of these recommendations and be able to project that over the next years. Thank you.
Can I please have the Finance Committee report?
Finance Committee voted to not approve this article by a vote of 4-4. FinCom discussion showed a strong desire to begin funding on ADA mitigation necessary. However, without a plan with expectations, the expectation for free cash allocation at this point seems unreasonable. There's no plan regarding the number or priority of projects, nor a timeline for completion, and it's also unclear on how this money would be allocated towards projects that may in fact have funding for ADA mitigation elsewhere.
Select Board report.
Select Board supports 4-1.
Is there a minority report on the Select Board?
No.
No. CIAC for a report. If you could bring the microphone to the middle, please.
Susan Asbody and Chaffee, CIAC Chair. The CIAC supports this initiative and believes that more specific details are necessary regarding the priorities and how these funds are to be allocated. However, we do find that this is an important issue to address, and the CIAC recommends that town committees, as appropriate, be included in the prioritization of ADA items that are to be addressed.
Thank you. Does anyone wish to be heard on Article 32? Ms. Bell, in the back balcony. Keep talking. I think the mic might be off. Remember, nobody's supposed to touch that on-off button except the Girl Scouts.
Yeah, it was.
There you go.
Thank you. I should have looked. Okay, Kay Bell. I live at 348 Old Lancaster Road. I'm the chair of the Commission on Disability, and I speak on their behalf. Let's see. The Department of Justice settlements and the ADA require that Sudbury address the transition plan of July 2021 within 3 to 5 years. The New England ADA Center guidance directs towns to work with staff and stakeholders to formulate action steps to implement the transition plan. The transition plan has a database of 1,382 line items related to the built environment. The built environment includes everything from our municipal and school buildings to our ball fields, playgrounds, and the Camp Suitaro Liberty Ledge property. The transition plan of July 2021 also includes a substantive report addressing compliance issues related to policies, practices, and procedures, including effective communication, which encompasses but is not limited to website accessibility. Of the 60 months available, 51 months remain. There is some urgency for tackling this work, and Town Manager Hayes has made a verbal commitment to the Commission on Disability to convene a working group immediately after this town meeting to launch a collaborative project to look at the whole of the transition plan and set up priorities and sequencing and strategies for accomplishing full compliance. The Commission on Disability voted unanimously in favor of recommending passage of Article 32. With this funding, the town manager and the next combined facilities director's working group will have a budget to apply to the highest priority and first feasible work to get the accessibility compliance ball rolling. The clock is ticking.
Does anybody else wish to be heard on Article 32?
Point of order.
Yes. Can you speak into the microphone, please? State your name and address.
Abrams, 161 Knobscott Road. You're probably getting sick of hearing from me, and I'm getting sick of having to point out the technical difficulties in this warrant and in this process. But up there, it says, in the words of the article, from free cash, and in here, the words of the article are available funds. Now, if town council is happy to render an opinion that free cash and available funds are exactly the same thing, that's fine. If they're not the same thing, I'd like to know what the difference are. I don't have a position on the article. I care about the language. I care about seeing free cash there and available funds here. Thank you.
Town Council.
Lee Smith, Town Council. So it is the language of the motion that is controlling and what the town meeting is voting upon. So while the article may be broader or include other sources of potential funds, what you're voting on is the language of the motion, which is to be transferred from free cash.
So I will take one comment if there is any more to be made. Otherwise, let's move to a vote. The quantum of vote required for passage. You have a comment? Town Manager Hayes.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Henry Hayes, Town Manager. So I understand the comments that have been made regarding process and compliance. I will say very clearly that the statement made by the Commission on Disability Chair is accurate regarding my intent to partner with the community in setting priorities. However, I will also say that this decision to request these funds for this purpose is not just for compliance, but it is value-based. And if we do not have these funds, then we will have to make decisions according to the funds that we do have available, which may equal delay. I yield.
Quantum of vote required for passage of Article 32 is majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. Thank you. All opposed, please raise your cards. Thank you. That passes by more than majority. Article 33, motion by Chair Roberts.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $160,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? There is. This, again, would be a playing for the presentation of a pre-recorded video. Is there anybody who wishes to see that video tonight? There is. Could you please play that?
Hello, I'm Bill Barletta, Combined Facilities Director for the Town of Sudbury. I'm here to present Article 33, Atkinson Pool Filtration Equipment Replacements, $160,000. This seeks to fund the replacement of the existing sand filtrations at the Atkinson Pool. These sand filtration systems have exceeded the useful life and are in need of replacement. There are two pools in the Atkinson Pool building. One is a lap pool, and one is a deeper dive well. They each have independent filtration systems. They're obviously critical to maintaining the healthy and proper swim water requirements, and pool cleanliness standards must be maintained at all times for the pools to remain in operation. The pools currently have excellent water quality. This would ensure that that remains the case. This system monitors chlorine levels and filtration levels and automatically adjust those to maintain the optimum water quality. The issue here is the age of the filters themselves. They operate continuously whether the pool is in operation or not. The issue is, should they become disabled, there's no backup repair. It may not necessarily be viable for these units due to their age. As I mentioned, they use a metered chlorination injection system to treat the water in each pool. Parts of these systems are over 30 years old and require repeated and costly maintenance, with parts becoming increasingly more expensive and difficult to source. This represents a real risk of system failure, requiring pool closure, which would have an enormous impact on the Park and Rec Department's revenue, as well as put the pool out of commission. The pool serves a number of the public and the town LS swim team as well. This picture illustrates the aged equipment and valves and associated devices. The project would, again, replace both the dive well filtration system and the lap pool filtration system. Thank you.
Committee report.
Finance Committee recommends approval by a vote of 7-2.
Can we have the Select Board report?
The Select Board supports 4-1.
Is there a minority report?
There is not. No.
Okay. Can I have the report from CIAC, please?
CIAC supports passage of this article. The proper functioning of the pool filtration system is critical to maintaining the health of the pool. And the present system in its age is becoming difficult to obtain the necessary parts. The new filtration system will ensure the health of the pool and allow the pool to remain in operation.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 33? I don't see anybody. The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 33 is a majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. Thank you. All opposed, please raise your cards. That passes by well more than majority. Article 34, motion by Chair Roberts.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $100,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? There is. Again, this is a pre-recorded video. Is anybody interested in seeing that presentation? There is. Please play that.
Hello, I'm Bill Barletta, Combined Facilities Director for the Town of Sudbury. I'm here to present Article 34, On-Call Architectural and Engineering House Doctor Contract for $100,000. The town anticipates a number of future building and facilities-related projects requiring architectural and/or engineering services in an effort to mitigate risk and provide predictability during the planning and design and to facilitate construction of these projects. This town is seeking the services of an architectural and or engineering firm that can provide specialty services on an needed basis to support the delivery of these projects. Again, this would be an as-needed service. It would establish a $100,000 contract limit for services. Those services would be drawn on by the town as needed. Some projects that would require these services are planned building repairs, facilities upgrades, building renovations, energy conservation sustainability measures, enacting recommendations to address accessibility barriers for the recently completed townwide ADA self-evaluation and transition plan, feasibility studies, space needs assessments, and other surveys or studies. One item in particular under building renovations is a much needed renovation of the office space for the health department here at the DPW building. That's a relatively large project that is going to require the services of an architect. The architect will need to draw the plans for construction, ensure they're all to code, not only with building codes, but with accessibility codes. That would come about after a space survey with the health department employees and the health department director, a survey of the existing building, and then again, a finished plan that we could then execute by going out to bid. That's a project that requires services beyond in-house skills and services the town currently has. That's an example of a project that is planned and has the need for the services, under the service. Projects would vary in scale, but generally there would be mid-level construction projects, small to mid-level, ranging between $10,000 or $500,000 per project. Currently, the town is unable to act in a timely and efficient manner to undertake required and planned projects. And as needed projects are delayed, those costs increase. Many municipalities utilize an architectural engineering house doctor contract. Sudbury is a bit unique in not having a mechanism to execute projects routinely. I mentioned the health department renovation as one project. We have a number of recommendations from the ADA transition plan that need to be enacted over the next years. Those will require, many of them will require an architect to draw them, stamp the plans, ensure it's all to specification, assist with getting those plans to bid, and construction administration if we would need that. So this is really a very critical element going forward as the town begins the ADA recommendations and other needed in-house work. We can also use the service for space studies, feasibility studies, or anything else that we would like to investigate on the town's behalf. The way this contract would work is the town would negotiate the fee for required services related to a specific project. Using the health department renovation as an example, the town would negotiate with the architect under contract for the fee for that specific project. When that is agreed upon, that amount will be deducted from the $100,000 available amount. As the contract is expended, each negotiated amount for each specific project would be deducted from $100,000. this could take 1 year, it could take 3 years, it could take 5 years. But when that is fully expended, the town would need to go out for bid for another round of services, and that could be whatever amount the town chose to use. If we were enacting a great number of projects, you may choose to increase it or just maintain that same amount for a shorter period of time. And this, again, will be really critical as the town begins to move into the ADA recommendations within town buildings and schools. Thank you.
Finance Committee report.
Finance Committee voted to not recommend approval on this by a vote of 1 in favor, 8 opposed. FinCom suggests this appropriation should be in the operating budget and that a request to fund consulting and or professional fees from free cash is an inappropriate source of funding. This is an operational need that should be aligned with department budgets.
Can the Select Board report?
The Select Board voted not to support 2-3.
Can we have the CIAC report?
The CIAC chooses unanimously not to take a position on the article at this time. In light of the fact that the present facilities director retired, the CIAC feels the new facilities director should be involved in making this decision.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 34? Okay, I see in the blue shirt in the front, and then we'll go up to the balcony.
Hi, Gary Napick, 208 Marlborough Road. Just more of a question. Wondering about how the firm would actually be selected. So would that actually be a competitive process to make sure that we're getting good rates? Secondly, I was a little surprised in the video where it was mentioned that every project would be negotiated separately. It seems like if we were going to have an in-house firm, one of the things we would want to do is actually have a services agreement, right, with pre-negotiated rates. So I'm just a little surprised that, you know, how would we be in a good negotiating position if we've already identified that there are in-house, like, preferred firm?
Town Manager Hayes.
Yes, thank you, Madam Moderator. Henry Hayes, Town Manager. So as it relates to the process for selection, we would utilize, we would be in compliance with the 30B and the engineering services, all those type of things that are associated. We would not break procurement processes. And so we would be able to utilize the predictable and repeatable processes for selection. So beyond that, as far as the negotiating rates within the contract, so those pieces, definitely I would utilize the skills of our next combined facilities director, and in our interviews, they, because we are nearing the end of the selection process, the concept of this has been discussed, and all of the candidates that we interview are familiar with this type of approach. I don't know if that fully answers your question.
There's an answer. So let's move on to Ms. Bell in the balcony, please.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Kay Bell, 348 Old Lancaster Road. I'm the chair of the Commission on Disability. The Commission on Disability voted unanimously to recommend passage of Article 34, as you might expect. The funds requested in this article will be spent on the services of a skilled architectural and engineering professional to design modest municipal building modifications. The Commission on Disability anticipates that there will be some such projects needed to address items that appear in the ADA transition plan of 2021 that will require design services. Not all items will require design services, but there are some that will. One example is the renovation or replacement of the single-user restroom on the second floor of the Flynn Building. The report reads, renovate and enlarge toilet room or add an accessible single-user toilet room on this floor. There are a number of similar-scale restroom projects at Featherland Park and Feely Field. And the estimated cost that is very conservative in our transition plan is $24,000 to do that. And you might be able to take advantage of an economy of scale by having an architect available to design all of those projects and get them started. Having a designer readily available who could draw up the plans would expedite getting these items completed when they come up in the sequence that is determined. As I said before, the clock is ticking. 51 months left.
Is there any other questions or comments on Article 34? Okay, Town Manager Hayes, and then we will have a vote.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Henry Hayes, Town Manager. So I understand the comments related to services inside being utilized inside of a departmental budget. This is our first ask and approach on this particular type of service. I also understand that there was at least one previous article that was a service that was requested, and so if I was to utilize this amount of funds inside the current budget that we have for combined facilities as opposed to the free cash request, then we will have to make some additional decisions as it relates to how we offset those costs and if there is an impact to service again within the current budget that just was approved. One other note where you heard in the presentation about the space needs, our current social worker has made space for the additional employee that was added previous, and our plan to make more space. We do not have the in-house service to do that, and we were looking as an opportunity to increase the speed, reliability, and advanced projects that would relate to that as well as other projects that were mentioned in the presentation. I yield.
The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 34 is majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. Thank you. All opposed, please raise your cards. Thank you. Article 34 fails. Article 35, motion by Chair Roberts.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. This, again, would be a presentation of a pre-recorded video. Is there anybody who wishes to see this pre-recorded video? There is. Could you please play that, Mr. Thompson?
Hello, I'm Bill Barletta, Combined Facilities Director for the Town of Sudbury. I'm here to present Article 35, Authorization to Proceed with DPW Facility Solar Project. First and foremost, this article does not present any finding nor seek any project approval or funding. Historically, in October of 2021, the Select Board authorized a letter of intent for a solar power purchase agreement between the Town of Sudbury and Select Energy Development for a potential electricity-producing solar array on the roof of the DPW building. Once that letter of intent was signed, a due diligence phase began for this project, which is still ongoing. The due diligence phase will identify and analyze potential cost savings, the roof type, and any related implications. The due diligence phase will conclude with a public presentation of options, recommendations of public input, and comment and deliberation. The Energy and Sustainability Committee will then present options and recommendations on whether the project is in the best interest of the town or not. The Energy and Sustainability Committee undertook this project along with other solar projects that are possibly under consideration. This authorization would allow the town to proceed with the project should it choose to do so at the conclusion of that due diligence and if the town ultimately decides to proceed. Why is this authorization needed? An authorization to proceed is required for this project as the solar power purchase agreement involves a lease of the building roof to Select Energy Development. And the agreement also involves a payment in lieu of taxes to the town by Select Energy. Any lease involving town property or payment to the town in lieu of taxes requires town meeting approval. So again, this authorization would not allow the project to go forward. It would just allow the project to go forward once the town chose to do so. Why is this authorization needed now? If this authorization is not adopted at this time, then the town ultimately chose to proceed with the project. It would not be able to go forward until the same authorization was brought forth and approved at a subsequent town meeting. And why is that important? Well, if the town chooses to proceed and authorization is not in place, such a delay may impact the economic viability of the project. And the viability is subject to the timing of incentives within the Massachusetts Department of Energy Resources Solar Massachusetts Renewable Target Program. And these SMART program incentives are a key element in the economic equation that determines ultimate viability. Right now, the project is being estimated and vetted with a specific set of incentives based on an anticipated time frame. If that time frame is exceeded, another set of incentives would be brought into the equation. As time goes on, the incentives decrease and it becomes increasingly unadvantageous for the town. The point here is if the authorization is in place and the town ultimately chooses to go through with the project, it will be able to do so in a more expeditious manner. And again, once the vetting and due diligence process is concluded, there'll be public presentation and then an ultimate decision to go forward or not. Thank you.
Does the Finance Committee have a position? Does the Finance Committee have a position? Can you just repeat that, please?
Finance Committee takes no position.
Does the Select Board have a position?
The Select Board supports 5-0.
Thank you. Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 35? In the back, please.
Thank you. Hello. All right. Alex by 5 Wadsworth Road. So renewable sources of energy are obviously a very important part of a much bigger and complex climate and sustainability picture. And honestly, if that's an issue that's important to you, no, we hope that people will stay around and look at the Article 58 later in this town meeting. But just to speak to this specific project, it's something that's been under consideration in some form or another by the town since about 2017. And in October 2021, Select, the developer, presented to the Energy and Sustainability Committee on this project. So even though details may change in the due diligence process, we do have some good sense of some of the benefits that this type of project might have for the town. Year one production at that time projected was 309,000 kilowatt hours of clean, renewable local energy. That would displace almost 100 tons of carbon dioxide emissions and almost 100 pounds of acid rain causing sulfur and nitrogen oxides. And just to point out that renewable energy is one of the best investments that the town can make. You know, in fact, it's such a good investment that there's a private, for-profit company that's willing to front the cash in order to provide us with guaranteed payments on a project of this type. So, you know, perhaps my only regret might be that the town could, if we could front the cash, then we could reap the entire benefits of this project, but alas, you know, there are other considerations at play. But in any case, I really just wanted to ask the hall to please support this article and vote yes. Thank you.
Does anybody else wish to be heard on Article 35? In the front, please.
Yes, my name is Nathaniel Friedman, 25 Crystal Lane, Sudbury. You know, we have a project going on.
Can you just repeat your name?
Sure, Nathaniel Friedman, 25 Christopher Lane, Sudbury. Okay.
Thank you.
So solar is a very good, wonderful way of getting green energy. And just curiosity, how big is this project going to be on the DPW? Like how many square feet or acres or it's going to cover? And will it be charging stations for cars to go there to get supercharged? I have an electric car. I believe in solar. I think it's awesome. I think you have a solar at the town dump and in the high school, I believe. I'm sure it's been very beneficial for the town. So more solar there is, the air is cleaner. It's green energy, and I'm all for it.
Town Manager Hayes, can you answer those questions?
So I can answer in part. I don't know if we have anyone from Energy and Sustainability Committee that would add to. However, for DPW or Department of Public Works, it would essentially take the entire flat roof and then two additional portions of the roof that are not flat. Outside of that, I would yield to Energy and Sustainability.
Is there anybody from? Okay.
That's just one last point. I think it's a very good way to use the space efficiently by putting in the roof because you're getting really like 8 to 10 hours of sunlight during the summertime and then less. And I think it's a great location. No one can see it, and it works.
So if you could just turn the microphone to the Girl Scout and have her take it to the back, please.
Thanks. Mark Sevier, 14 Arborwood Road. The array is, at this point, proposed to be 280 kilowatts. We don't currently have a plan for additional charging stations at the DPW building. There are currently two there already. We are planning to put EV charging stations at the library, as well as at the Flynn building. I think that answers your questions.
Okay.
One other point. The array that's at the landfill is under a similar sort of arrangement with the power purchase, and that over time has been very beneficial for the Energy Committee to be able to implement additional projects without affecting the town's budget. Thank you.
Last call. Anybody else? Questions or comments? Okay. The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 35 is 2/3. All in favor, please raise your cards. Thank you. All opposed, please raise your cards. Article 35 passes by more than 2/3. Article 39 is withdrawn. Article 40 is withdrawn. Article 42, motion by Chair Roberts.
Move to appropriate the sum of $3,400,000 to be expended under the direction of the town manager for the reconstruction of the drainage system throughout the town, including design, engineering, construction, and related professional services, materials, appurtenances, repaving of roadways, and incidental or related expenses associated therewith. And to meet this appropriation, the town treasurer, with the approval of the select board, be authorized to borrow $3,400,000 under and pursuant to General Law Chapter 44, Section 7 or 8, or any other enabling authority, and to issue bonds or notes of the town therefore.
Is there a second? There is. Does anybody wish to hear the presentation on Article 42? There is. So a presentation by Dan Nason, DPW Director, and I would just ask that you keep your comments as brief as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Getting so old now, I need these. Thank you, Dan Nason, Public Works Director. So this is Article 42, Townwide Drainage and Roadway Reconstruction. Originally, you remember in September of 2020, I believe, it was a town meeting we had outside. We had requested some funds to design a roadway reconstruction. I call it townwide roadway reconstruction because we are focusing on two main roads for this season, for this construction season. However, I called it townwide roadway reconstruction because I did this project or designed it as a what we call a book job so that I can use it throughout the community at other locations. So basically, we're bidding it out for all the appurtenances under the roadway for the drainage system, both the piping systems as well as drain manholes, catch basins and whatnot, outfalls, so that I can utilize that same bid process or the same bid documents for multiple projects throughout town. So This request, I had originally estimated $3.5 million. We actually had a bid opening about 2 weeks ago, and I've reduced it down to $3.4 million given the bid document that came in. To reconstruct the drainage network, again, focus on Goodmans Hill Road and Pratt's Mill Road this construction season. As I'm sure you probably remember, in September of 2020, we had a roadway failure on Goodmans Hill Road when one of the police officers located it for us, luckily, using the town vehicle. So we're looking to, replace the deteriorated corrugated metal pipe to eliminate the continued developing sinkholes. Thank you.
Finance Committee for report.
Finance Committee recommends approval by a vote of 8-0.
Select Board for report.
The Select Board supports 4-0-1.
CIAC report.
CIAC recommends passage of this article and appreciates the economies of sales or economies of scale that were taken into advantage by bidding these jobs all together.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 42? Questions or comments? I see none. The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 42 is 2/3. All in favor, please raise your cards. Thank you. Any opposed, please raise your cards. Article 42 passes by well more than 2/3. Article 43 is withdrawn. Article 44 is withdrawn. Article 45, motion by Chair Roberts.
Move to authorize the Select Board to acquire by purchase, gift, eminent domain, or otherwise permanent and temporary easements in certain parcels of land adjacent to and or continuous with and or opposite to 78 Old Framingham Road and 120 Knobscot Road, as depicted on the plan of land entitled Plan of Property Surveyed for Town of Sudbury, Old Framingham Road, Sudbury, Massachusetts, dated January 12, 2022, prepared by Jarvis Land Survey, Inc., a copy of which is on file with the town clerk. A said plan may be amended for public way purposes, including without limitation drainage, walkway, utility, slope, grading, roadway, relocation, and construction of improvements and structures and other related purposes to enable the town to undertake the Old Framingham Road walkway extension project.
Is there a second? There is. Does anybody wish to hear the presentation on Article 45? Thank you. You need a microphone before you can talk.
Ken Holtz, 175 Landham Road. Is it possible to request that Article 45 and 46 be heard at the same time, since they seem to be very related?
No, the first article is dealing with the easements, and the second is dealing with payment of cost of construction, so we are going to deal with them separately. Presentation by Dan Nason, DPW Director, please.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Thank you again, Dan Nason, Public Works Director. So this Article 45 is for the Old Framingham Road, Knobscot Road walkway extension, and this portion of the article is for, this article is for the project easements. I tried to lump them together as well, but since we have to break them up, I figured I'd do the easements first. So approval of this article will provide easements necessary to construct a walkway to connect the existing walkway on Old Framingham Road with the current, which currently ends roughly at house number 60, all the way to Knobscot Road, including without limitation drainage, walkway, utility, slope, grading, roadway relocation, and construction of improvements and structures and other related purposes. The current alignment of the roadway in the vicinity of the existing culvert needs to be shifted easterly to accommodate the new walkway construction, along with required easements and related work. So this Article 45 will cover the easements needed for this project to proceed. So in this first slide, there is a temporary easement on house lot number, it's address number 78, Old Framingham Road. There's a temporary easement which is shown. It's backwards. Which is shown up in this top portion. It's 2,739 square feet. And a permanent walkway easement in the bottom portion here, close to the roadway, of 1,183 square feet. Then a little further down Old Framingham Road, closer to Knobscot, we have another permanent drain easement. This is on the Murphy property, which has an address, I believe, of 120 Knobscot Road. This is very confusing to me, this device. It seems backwards. So we have a permanent drain easement of 599 square feet, which is located in the lower portion here. This actually property is also related to Sawinski, which is the 78 Old Framingham Road. Then we have an additional 837 square feet of a permanent easement on the Murphy property. And then just below that, we have a permanent roadway easement located here because we have to relocate the angle of the roadway. So we're coming in at more of a 90-degree angle with Old Framingham Road where it hits Knobscot to try and limit. I don't know if anyone's traveled that roadway much, but there's times when people try and short-circuit that, and they're doing 40 miles an hour, and they try and cut right down on Old Framingham Road. So we're trying to get that to be a little bit safer of an easement, safer of a roadway alignment and have it be more perpendicular. Thank you.
Does the Finance Committee have a report?
Finance Committee takes no position.
The Select Board report?
The Select Board supports 5-0.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 45? Okay. Right there in the middle, please.
Elaine Barnard Goldstein, 40 Indian Ridge Road. We're talking about the possibility of a purchase or other forms of acquisition, but there's no indication of the amount that we're talking about. And what would that be, please?
Mr. Nathan, can you answer that, please?
Yes, Madam Moderator. There is no monetary exchange for these easements. We've been dealing with the homeowners, and they're granting the easements to the town.
Anybody else wish to be heard? Yes, down here, please.
Haynes Road. So I just.
I'm sorry, the microphone wasn't on. Can you repeat that, please?
Dandy Pompey, 35 Haynes Road. So in this case, where we have eminent domain as a means of attaining the property, we already know we're not using eminent domain, and therefore we aren't going to get into the back and forth like we had on Article 19. Is that correct?
Mr. Nathan?
Madam Moderator, I defer to Council.
Town Council?
It's my understanding that the easements are being donated, so there is no need for eminent domain acquisition. There will be a grant of easement for nominal consideration that will be recorded. There is no taking.
Thank you.
Anybody else on Article 45? In the back, please.
Hi, good evening. Thank you, Madam Moderator. My name is Radha Gargaya, 120 Portland Road. I have a comment and I have a request for the town. So I'd like to support both this article and the next one for the walkways. And in 1999, Sudbury had a kind of walkway committee, and then I had happened to serve on it, so it was 23 years ago. And we prepared a list of walkways that were to be built. So my request to the town is at each town meeting, if they could give an update as to what percentage of the walkways that were in the 23 road report are done and what need to be done and what are held up. And we're coming up on the 25th year mark, so I'd like to see at least 25% of it done. Thank you.
Is there anybody in the balcony who wishes to be heard? Okay. Can we have those last two, and then we'll go to a vote?
In Arrowhead Road.
Can you say your name again, please?
Sorry, Brian Goffey, 14 Arrowhead Road. The walkways
the resident walkway petition process that was previously put in place by the walkway committee. I was under the impression that that was no longer a viable option in my own attempts to try to get a walkway installed. So this is a town-driven need, it sounds like, and I'd like to better understand, get some clarification in terms of how the town deemed this necessary versus other walkways in town where there are similar dangers. Thank you.
Mr. Neeson?
Yes, thank you, Madam Moderator. I can try and answer this as best possible. The DPW has multiple walkway projects that we're working on right now. Most of them that we've studied, I can name off a few. There's Goodmans Hill Road, there's Dutton Road, there is Peckham Road, there was this one on Old Framingham Road. All of them have certain limitations or certain road bumps along the way, most of which are either we are not able to get the easements from the property owners, and that puts a big roadblock in the project, no pun intended. We're not going to take the easement for the property, so we can't move forward with it. Other stumbling blocks are whether it's a water resource issue that we have to go through permitting or we have to fill wetlands. We don't want to do that. I'm sure the Conservation Commission wouldn't allow us to do that. There's oftentimes major utilities, whether it's utility poles, utility pole relocation, hydrants, and the majority of them also require a lot of grading. If you think of Goodmans Hill Road, there's a lot of grading that would be required there, which means that we'd have to install retaining walls, increasing the price, and then in addition to that, we'll have more land takings. I don't know if that answers the question, but we have multiple ones that we have studied and actually gone through the engineering for that.
And I said one more comment in the back, please, and then we'll move to a vote.
To follow up on that. So basically, this one rose to the surface simply because we didn't have any of those problems. We were dealing with the homeowners, and they were granting the easements, and it was some locations we're not looking to add additional walkways. This is basically a fill-in project where it connects an existing walkway that dead ends to the rest of the network system. So we're trying to do the infill as best possible.
And
thank you.
Did the microphone make its way back there? Yes. Thank you.
Yes. Kevin Portelli, 188 Willis Road. I understand that eminent domain doesn't apply in this case, so why have it in there to begin with? Like, can we remove it from there?
Town Council?
So it's our firm's practice to include as broad an authorization to seek from town meeting to acquire the property in question. As we discussed yesterday, the select board specifically moved in the words of the motion to exclude that, and we could go through that exercise again today, but as you've heard from DPW director, the easements are being donated, so it's not an option that's on the table. So it's at the meeting's discretion, but it does not seem necessary, in my opinion.
The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 45 is majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. Thank you. All opposed, please raise your cards. Article 45 passes by well more than majority. Article 46, motion by Chair Roberts. Yes, you need to wait for a microphone, but somebody will bring it to you.
Stacey Monroe, 37 Greystone Lane. Madam Moderator, at the beginning of the meeting, I believe you said that there was an article that was intended to be IP'd, Article 57.
Correct.
I think that confused a lot of people, that language, because intended to be IP'd is not typically binding language. So is the article definitively withdrawn, or it is not withdrawn, and are there any other articles that are withdrawn?
No articles have been withdrawn. I have been informed by the proponent of that article that is what he will be doing tonight. So we will deal with it when we get to that article.
So as of now, it's not withdrawn?
It's not withdrawn.
Thank you.
Motion by Chair Roberts for Article 46.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $600,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? There is. Does anybody wish to hear the presentation on this one? Thank you. DPW Director Dan Nason, please. Thank you.
Still nothing? There we go. Thank you, Madam Moderator. Again, Dan Nason, Public Works Director. This is Article 46, same project. This is just the project portion of it for the funding of the actual project instead of the easements. Thank you, already advanced it. So again, approval of this article will provide the funds to construct the walkway that we just spoke of. This project will run from roughly house number 60 across the street where the existing walkway terminates and sends the users of the walkway, the pedestrians, into the roadway. And it'll extend all the way down on the easterly side of Old Framingham Road and terminate at the terminus point of the existing walkway on Knobscot Road. Thank you.
Finance Committee report.
Finance Committee votes to approve this by a vote of 5-2-1.
Select Board report.
The Select Board supports 4-1.
Is there a minority report? CIAC report, please.
The CIAC supports this article. However, it would, the CIC also would like to have a little more clarity on the cost details of the project and hopes that the town investigates some alternative sources, including grants.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 46? Okay. In the front, please. Nope. In the front. I'm sorry. Can you raise your card or can you stand up, please?
Hi, Meredith Gerson, 23 Hilltop Road. I was wondering if there was any explanation for the large variance in the dollar value between what's proposed and what was on the Clean Streets Prioritization Plan.
Mr. Nason,
it was about $139K on the Clean Street. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Through the moderator. This is a publicly bid project. I don't believe during the that feasibility study that was performed for the Complete Streets program, they didn't take into consideration relining the roadway, as well as in order to keep the walkway on the easterly side of the roadway, we have to shift the actual layout of the road, not the layout of the roadway, the layout of the travel way slightly to the west in order to accommodate the walkway to keep it on the easterly side. And the reason I chose to do that is so we wouldn't have the users of the walkway have to cross over using a crosswalk, which is dangerous in itself, following along closer to Knobscot Road, and then have to cross over another crosswalk to get back over to Knobscot Road. So they didn't take into consideration that with some additional drainage that we need to rehabilitate in that location at the crossing.
Okay. And the middle right, please.
Rebecca Cutting, 381 Maynard Road. Isn't there, I saw on the color on the slide, and my memory serves, that there is a duck pond, there is a wetland at the intersection of Knobscot and Old Framingham on the west side, sort of the northwest corner. And so if you realign the road, can you tell us what that's going to look like? Are you going to do a bridge, a culvert, avoid the wetlands, et cetera?
Mr. Nason?
Yes, thank you, Madam Moderator. We did go through the permitting process. We've been through conservation as well, and it's just a slight adjustment of the roadway. It's not we're not going to need a new bridge. There's an existing culvert there now, so we're just extending in a small portion. So we've been through all the permitting phase. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments on this article? Okay. In the back, please.
Kevin Portelli, 188 Willis Road. Apologies if I missed something here, but on the warrant it says 700K. And the slide says 600.
Mr. Nason?
Yes, thank you, Madam Moderator. It's a very good question. I was waiting for that one. So at the time when the warrant was developed on this project and a previous project, it was my best engineer's estimate as the cost of the project. What I try to do on these types of projects at this level of detail, I try to line it up so that we do design in 1 year for the project and then work diligently that entire year so I can put it out to bid just before town meeting. So I know it looks a little bit confusing. I did my best guess. Originally, it was $500,000. I had to edit that because I was concerned, giving supply chain issues and whatnot. I edited it to $700,000. hoping that we'd be less than that. So I actually publicly bid this, and the bids are open again a couple weeks ago. And with contingency, resident engineering services, and construction admin, we're in the $600,000 range. So that's why it changed. So I did my best estimate, and then I was trying to hone in on that, but I knew that we would bid this just before town meeting. So, again, I don't like coming to town meeting. I've been doing this a long time. I don't like coming and say, hey, I think it's going to be this much money. Let's hope and pray, and we're going to be, you know, I might be back for more. I don't really like doing that. So that's why I try to line it up so that I have the bids open prior to town meeting. I don't always get it right, so I'm trying the best I can to get it to the exact amount. So I include contingency plus plus, like I said, construction, administrative services, and this, and it totals $600,000.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ms. Drettler?
Annie Drettler, Goodman's Hill Road. Is there an opportunity for a grant, a complete streets grant? Could the town delay doing this and apply for a complete streets grant next year? This project was, I was on the complete streets committee a couple of years ago, and this project, which I support the idea of the project, but the project was identified as a priority project for a complete streets grant, and to my knowledge it hasn't been applied for this project.
Mr. Nathan?
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Madam Moderator. That is definitely a possibility. We could delay it. Right now we have three projects on the Complete Streets program totaling just under $400,000. This is just another project we figured we can complete as another extension of the walkways. But it can definitely be deferred if that's the wishes of the hall.
At this point, I'm going to move on to a vote. The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 46 is a majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. Thank you. All opposed, please raise your cards. Thank you. Article 46 passes by well more than majority. Article 47, motion by Chair Roberts.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? Thank you. Does anybody wish to hear the presentation on Article 47? Thank you. Presentation by Beth Studenmeyer, environmental planner.
Good evening. Thank you, Madam Moderator. So this is the first in a series of CPA funding requests for the town to consider. This was an application on behalf of, I'm sorry, my name is Beth Sudmeyer. I'm with Planning and Community Development Department. And as I was saying, this is a CPA-supported article, and the application was originally submitted on behalf of the town manager. So this is a funding article related to the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail Phase 2D. This is the North-South Rail Trail that begins at the town line with Concord, and the southern terminus is just north of the junction with the proposed Mass Central Rail Trail. It's a 4.4-mile corridor, and I'm not going to go through all the details because I think most people are pretty familiar with the project. I just did want to clarify the phase that we're talking about, the 4.4-mile section going north-south. And the project has overcome many obstacles through the years and is at the point where we are completing the design. We have the majority of the environmental permits in hand, and the right-of-way process is proceeding smoothly. To revisit, the design funding to date has been supported by town meeting vote, and it totals about $1.2 million. As we've advanced to this late phase in the design, we have recognized that there are a few design components that we would like to complete in the future. These are specifically related to graphic design of interpretive signs and additional hardscape and artistic features along the corridor. These design items are actually the subject of a grant application that's under review by the Sudbury Foundation as well. And then in terms of construction funding, as has been said in the recent presentations, the town will receive over $12 million for the construction of this 4.4-mile corridor from state and federal funding. There are a few items that Mass DOT and Federal Highway will not cover during the construction phase. Those include the construction oversight by the town's design engineers. So we've worked very closely with design engineers to develop all of the phases of the design. The most recent consulting firm that we've worked with is Fussin O'Neill, and they have led us through the 75 and 100% design phases that were submitted to Mass DOT and found to be very favorable by Mass DOT. And funds associated with this article will allow them to stay on board to review the final shop drawings, the final elements associated with materials that will be used, and oversee the construction to ensure that compliance is achieved so that the design really becomes the reality that we desire. Additionally, environmental monitoring will be a component of this, again, hiring consultants that can help the town oversee the construction phase of the project and ensure compliance with the order of conditions from the Sudbury Conservation Commission and other environmental permits. So we take great pride in our environment in Sudbury and want to make sure that this project is going to have a light touch on the community and the neighborhoods through which it travels, and that all of the work that went into the environmental permitting will be considered throughout the process. The construction costs for utility connections are specific to hydration stations. There will be two hydration stations, watering fountains, along the corridor, and Mass DOT covers the hydration units, the water fountains themselves, but not the pipe connection to get the water to the fountains. I can't explain it, I'm sorry, but this is the situation that we're finding ourselves in, and so we need some funding to connect those water fountains. As well as a future potential electric vehicle charging station. We would like to install this at the proposed Broadacre Farm parking lot. The state will not cover this cost, but we can install the conduit with town funding and then potentially pursue a grant to install that charging station in the future. And then finally, given the circumstances with construction bid processes, sourcing of materials, inflation, we definitely want to keep some contingency funds at the disposal of the town as we advance to the construction phase of the project. So this is an additional element and part of this request. Originally, we were thinking that these additional two items that Mass DOT has not indicated they will fund, even though these were part of the scope of the project that the town had proposed to Mass DOT, a bathroom and a pavilion at Broadacres Farm. Mass DOT has indicated they will not cover the cost of these as part of the DOT project. The town would have had the option to pay for them independently, and they would be constructed as part of the project. But in the interest in maintaining more of those contingency and emergency funds, we're going to defer the inclusion of these items and consider it at a later time. We also will intend to pursue grant funding and fundraise for these items as well. So it's possible that if any funds remain after we're sure that construction is moving smoothly, the bid process has gone well, that we would consider to use some of these funds towards these items. But I do want to clarify that everything that we're considering under this article, everything that's mentioned, would not be able to be covered with the $500,000 ask. So our funding priorities are definitely the construction oversight by the consultants for the design engineers and the environmental monitor to be able to oversee the construction process. For those utility costs, the water connection and the EV conduit for the future EV charging stations, and then to establish an emergency and contingency fund that the town could utilize as needed. And then if funds remain after we are sure that the process has gone well, then these other items could be considered, and we will also be pursuing other funding opportunities that might arise in terms of grants and fundraising opportunities. I did just want to comment that given that there have been some comments related to lack of specificity in the actual motion itself regarding the items that would be covered, and I think this is in large part due to the nature of an emergency and a contingency request, is that you don't know exactly what may come up in the process, and so we felt that it was best to be as general with and broad in the request as possible, and that is the end of the presentation right now. I just want to clarify that it is a funding request for a total of $500,000 from CPA funds.
Can we have the Finance Committee report?
Finance Committee recommends approval by a vote of 7-1.
Can we have the Select Board report?
The Select Board supports 5-0.
Can we have the report from the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail Advisory Task Force, please?
Hi, Lana Schwartz, 72 Maynard Road, Bruce Freeman Rail Trail Task Force. The task force supports this unanimously.
And can we have a report from the CIAC?
At the time that the CIAC met to review this article, we decided to table it as we wanted to wait until we had further information on what was going to be funded.
This time we will have discussion on this. I want to remind people that this is not a discussion about the rail trail generally, but about this specific funds and these specific expenditures. So at this point, let me just see if there's other people who have not spoken tonight who want to speak on this article. Okay. Mr. Garvin from the Planning Committee, please, the Planning Board.
Thank you.
You need a microphone. People at home cannot hear without the microphone.
Thank you. Steve Garvin, 26 Bowditch Road. The Planning Board and the Master Plan Implementation Committee both voted unanimously to support Article 47.
Thank you. Mr. Schneller.
Bill Schneller, 37 Jarman Road. Just a question. A young woman was seriously injured in Wayland or Western, I think it was Wayland, on the Mass Central Rail Trail a number of months ago, had to be medevaced down to Boston. She was riding a bicycle. That particular crossing does not have flashing beacon lights. I would ask the question for Betsy Udmeyer. Are such safety lights in covered by MassDOT, and if not, can you commit that we would put such safety lights, use this money towards that?
Ms. Sudenmeyer, before you answer that question, for the people who just came in, are you looking to speak? And if not, please take a seat. We can't have anybody standing. Thank you. Ms. Sudenmeyer?
Thank you. So we have proposed many rapid flashing beacons. So these are the push-button activated signals or motion-activated. The ones that we're going to be installing can actually operate either way with the push-button or motion activation. Along the northern section of the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail, they originally installed push-button activated ones but have since switched to ones that are able to be motion-activated. This allows Sudbury to be flexible in determining which mechanism they would prefer to utilize within the Sudbury corridor. So most of the intersections will have the push-button activated rapid flashing beacons. There are a couple of driveways, essentially, that traffic warrants did not warrant the installation of those. So those will be rail trail user indications for stop signs and stop bars so that they would wait for traffic to pass. But again, those are at very low traffic driveway crossings.
Other comments and questions? And he's going to come to the podium, please.
Can you bring it up, Mark? Danny Pompey, 35 Haynes Road. This is a CPA article, so as I understand it, you can't really amend it. You can't make changes to it. You either accept it the way it is, or you send it back for a rewrite and look at it again at another time. My presentation is going to refer to eminent domain and who actually owns the right-of-way. Next slide, please.
This article is not dealing with any right-of-way or easements. Do you have anything specific that you want to state with respect to the expenditures that are being requested?
What my argument intends to portray is that we should not be spending additional money or even planning to spend additional money on the rail trail until we truly understand the ownership. And the ownership is much more confused than what most people in the audience understand.
So I'm going to limit you to that comment, because to the extent you want to make any comment about the specific expenditures, you can, but we're not going to get into a discussion of who owns the right-of-way at this point.
Well, thank you for your tolerance then.
Sure. Ms. Nam?
Hello. Jean Nam, 81 Newbridge Road. I had a similar question to Bill's question, in the sense that it's a question of priority. And I was wondering, these are a lot of nice things to have, and I was wondering, have we considered, or would we consider, if there is some of that money left over, instead of spending it on the pavilion and the restroom, to consider the hundred-some abutters that are going to bear the brunt of this trail? Their backyards are going to be different. They don't know how different, but it's going to be different. And some, you know, some may like it, and some may want to build a fence, and some may want to plant some trees. So I would like there to be some sort of consideration for, perhaps, if we're going to spend money, let's spend money to help our neighbors and our friends before we do some of the fancier things. Thank you.
Claire, can you answer that, please?
That's a good question. Thank you. There is a very generous planting plan that is planned as part of the MassDOT project. So where there were requests from abutters and where it made sense, there have been a lot of proposed plantings for screening with the intent of softening the edge of the trail and making it a more natural appearance. So I feel like a lot of abutters will be pleased to see the planting plan. The intent is also, in working with the landscape architects, both from our design group and from MassDOT, is that once the clearing happens and the construction happens, we'll be walking the corridor to design and further modify the placement of the planting to identify where there are gaps and where it makes the most sense to fill those gaps, because it's difficult at this time to fully grasp where clearing is going to happen and where it won't, where you'll have those gaps. And so I'm very relieved that we have a lot of flexibility with DOT, and they do many projects like this. Our landscape architect from the design firm will be on site, as well as the DOT landscape and representatives from the town, to ensure that we're all satisfied. And actually, we can engage the abutters at that process as well. The abutters can come out and meet with us and discuss placement of the plantings at the time, just immediately before the installation of the plantings. So I've been pleased with the design for the landscaping as it's progressed. The landscape proposal was not fully represented in the 100% plan, if anybody has taken a look at those. So the next plan submission, which is called PS&E, Plan Specification and Estimate, will have updated and improved landscaping proposed. So I don't think that we would necessarily be opposed if we recognize that DOT is not going to cover an extra tree here or there to potentially use town funds to do that. But I, again, feel like we have a very robust plan that will be coming forth as part of the DOT project, and hopefully it wouldn't be necessary.
Other questions or comments? In the back, please. Lady with the glasses, please.
Rebecca Cutting, 381 Maynard Road. And as the moderator may know, I do have a motion to amend, which I may withdraw, depending upon the answers to the questions that Ms. Sudemeyer and I have been working on. And I appreciate her help in helping me understand. I have followed the Mass Central Railway permitting. And right now, that permitting is stuck, unfortunately.
Again, we're not talking about permitting. We're talking about expenditures for these specific items. So if you could keep your comments to that, I would appreciate it.
I'm just trying to provide some background. And one of the things that it's stuck on is a historic feature, which is in, as I understand it, the Mass Central right-of-way, but also may be affected by the Bruce Freeman Trail. And as I understand it from Sudemeyer, because this feature, it's called a diamond junction, it's where the two railways join together, and it is an unusual feature. I have photographs of it. It's right behind the former Crummell Station. And the issue with the Sudbury Historic Commission's review has been the length of the rails that lead into it and out of it from both rail trails. It's two rail trails met in a swampy woods, and they produced a diamond. And it's a historic feature in a railway, the Mass Central, which is eligible for being registered on the National Registry of Historic Places. So my question is, as part of the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail construction costs, will you be able to ensure that the diamond in the Mass Central right away and will not be affected or moved or otherwise disturbed by the work on the Bruce Freeman?
Ms. Sudemeyer?
Thank you. So as we've discussed, but I'm happy to reiterate, the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail project will not be impacting any of the rails within the Mass Central Rail Trail corridor, which is owned by MBTA. So we are operating approximately, for this phase 2D, we are operating approximately 40 feet north. That's the start of the rail trail project, the subject rail trail project, 40 feet north of that diamond. And there is no intent to have any disturbance associated with the Diamond Junction area. The limit of work, the construction area, is clearly articulated on the plans, and it does not include any activities in that area.
We're looking at the Bruce Freeman plans, the most complete ones, and those are the best, actually, because the Mass Central is not as well developed. I noticed there were temporary easements.
So you've gone to our two-minute limit, and I think we are veering outside the scope of this article, so I'd like to move on at this point.
If the easements
please
affect
the
diamond.
Please hand the microphone back to the Girl Scout. Thank you. Thank you. Quantum of vote required for passage of Article 47 is majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. Thank you. Any opposed, please raise your card. Thank you. Article 47 passes by well more than majority. Article 48, motion by Chair Roberts.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. Does anybody want to hear the presentation for Article 47? There is. Ms. Sudemeyer, I'm sorry, 48, thank you. Ms. Sudemeyer, please, for presentation.
Thank you. So again, this is a request for CPA funds. The application was originally submitted by the town manager, and the CPC supported advancing it to town meeting. This is for now another section of the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail. The section we just discussed, the 4.4-mile section we just discussed, is known as Phase 2D. Sometimes we call this section Phase 3. So this section lies along the... Sorry, I lost the clicker. Here we go. Sorry about that. This section of the proposed rail trail extension lies along the newly acquired former CSX-owned corridor. This is a 1.4-mile corridor that extends from the junction with the Mass Central Rail Trail we were just speaking about south to the Framingham Town Line. The town acquired this in 2020. This is a critical link, especially the northern part of this section, which would get us from the terminus of the Phase 2D to Route 20. And then south of Route 20, there's really no substantial outlet until you would get to Framingham. So we anticipate that there would likely be an incremental advancement of a design and construction of this project. But it is providing critical links to neighborhoods, businesses, districts, conservation lands, and open spaces. Again, just briefly revisiting the full extent of the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail, a proposed 25-mile corridor that extends from Lowell to Framingham. So this would be the southerly section in Sudbury. And then there would be an additional proposed section in Framingham, which currently is still owned by CSX and their subsidiaries. And it would be a potential Framingham project at some point in the future if they chose to advance acquisition, design, and construction of a rail trail in the Framingham section. So that southern section for the trail in Sudbury is fairly dependent on whether or not the Framingham section would advance, but we, through this article, propose to start collecting data on that southern section as well as the northern section. This just allows you a bit of perspective of where the corridor is. This is on Route 20, looking south to the corridor of the, north. So this is taken a few years ago. It has overgrown quite a bit lately, but this gives you an example, an idea of the location of the corridor. So the funding request is for $300,000. The tasks associated with this request are meant to advance the design and construction of this section, this phase three of the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail. It would collect the necessary corridor data, including survey, wetlands delineation. It would allow our consultants to consider the feasibility of the project and design alternatives. It would allow us to conduct a preliminary parking area investigation and potential conceptual development of a parking area next to Route 20. It would involve the public processes, coordination meetings, and generate a cost-benefit analysis. One of the factors associated with a project of this nature is whether or not the town would choose to go the route of seeking the federal and state funding as we did with the Phase 2D section of the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail. So again, in that case with Phase 2D, the town has funded and constructed the design process, and then state and federal funds take over to pay for the bulk of the construction costs. In this case, it's a much smaller corridor, so we anticipate both design and construction costs will be smaller. In order to go the MassDOT route and pursue construction through that process, it often takes a number of years to get on the list to receive the funding, and then you also have much more significant design costs because of meeting all of the requirements that MassDOT has. Ultimately, the project would be the same in the end, but there would be some cost savings if the town would choose to design it itself and potentially construct it itself. And we're not in a position to make a decision about whether or not we would pursue one course of action or the other until we conduct this assessment, generate a cost-benefit analysis, and then can make that determination. And then we'd be able to consider the costs and the timeline associated with advancing the project. We know that the focus for and the most urgent desire for this section of the corridor is to advance the first quarter mile to get from the terminus of the Phase 2D section, which is at the junction of the Mass Central Rail Trail, to bring that quarter mile down to Route 20 to connect that, commercial and economic corridor to the rest of the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail. And so we are proposing to design that first quarter mile, take it to an additional design level than what the rest of the corridor would involve. And if it is determined that we would be pursuing a Mass DOT design, we anticipate these funds would be able to get us to the 25% design. But if it is not a Mass DOT design, we think that it's possible we could get to the 100% design, and then the town would be in a position to put the project out to bid. Again, we're not ready to make that call, but we just wanted to let you know the extent to which these funds might be able to advance the design for that first quarter mile. That's all. Thank you.
Finance Committee report.
Finance Committee recommends approval by a vote of 8-0.
Select Board report.
The Select Board supports 3-2.
Is there a minority report from the Select Board?
I was one of the minority.
It's not. Is it on?
I was one of the minority. Part of the rationale is that the there is no commitment at this time from City of Framingham to complete their portion, so this would otherwise be designing a path to a dead end, which is not something that we would build. There was a suggestion by the CIAC that the money be split, and they were in favor of the money going down to Route 20, but not the money going towards design down to Framingham. And finally, I would just add that recently the state replaced the signal at the crossing of Union Ave, you know, right into Sudbury Farms Plaza with a fully ADA accessible, you know, blinking braille makes a sound crossing, and that where the Bruce Freeman 2D would end at Station Road, one could walk or bike just a few hundred feet, if that, and be then going right past Sudbury Coffee, for example, and onto Union Ave, where Complete Streets funding could just finish that sidewalk, and until, you know, could be years until the Framingham issue ever gets settled, that would be a way of, you know, if you will, spilling all the traffic directly into our business district and crossing safely at that brand new signal.
CIAC for report.
But the CIAC position was just as Select Board member just said it. We did not approve it as it is written. The article is written. However, we did look at it in the two sections. And we do recommend splitting the money to finish the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail down to Route 20, because we see that as an asset. However, until Framingham does make a commitment, we feel that the town should not be expending those funds at this time.
Bruce Freeman Rail Trail Advisory Task Force report, please.
Lana Schwartz, 72 Maynard Road, Bruce Freeman Rail Trail Task Force. The task force supports this unanimously.
Thank you. Discussion on Article 48, or any questions? I want to make sure there's nobody in the balcony. Okay, Mr. Simon.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Len Simon, Meadowbrook Circle. First, when I spoke yesterday, I omitted acknowledging Beth Sudemeyer's tremendous contributions to the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail design and the work that's been done for the past 5.5 years. I apologize to Beth for not including her yesterday, but please, there's a special thanks to you for all you've done for the past 5.5 years. The second point I'd like to make is that the funds which are being requested are not for design of any part south of Route 20, only for design between the Diamond near Crumble Station and Route 20. The third point is that I've worked with Beth in various capacities at the MPO, at DOT, committees in town here, and no one has put in more time or more effort to make this project become a success. Beth has earned the admiration of state officials. She's worked with them to get the permitting done. She's walked every inch of that rail trail many times. There is no one in town.
I think we can all appreciate her. Can you just focus on the article at question? Sure. Thank you.
There is no one who is in a better position to make the recommendation for these articles than Beth Sudermeyer. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Garvin, in the front row, please.
Steve Garvin, 26 Bowditch Road, Chairman of the Planning Board. The Planning Board and Master Plan Implementation Committee voted unanimously to support this article.
I'm going to go to the gentleman behind Mr. DiPompeo.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Ray Phillips, 40 Whispering Pine Road. In October of 2018, there was a special town meeting. At that time, a citizen petition was put forth for $650,000, and that obviously had a lot of discussion. One of the themes of that discussion was that this was going to be the final amount of money that would ever be asked for from the town. In fact, the CIAC said those words. I've listened to them on a couple of occasions now. So my question is, how did an $800,000 expenditure that we're looking at between these two articles, why wasn't that brought to the attention of the town when they voted on the $650,000? And maybe this is a rhetorical question, but what assurances do we have that we won't be back at the next town meeting for another $1 million?
Ms. Sudermeyer, can you answer those questions?
Certainly valid questions, and I think that we've heard that it's the nature of many of these types of construction projects that there will be cost escalations as time passes. The $300,000 that's the subject of this article, of course, was not available for any consideration in 2018, as the acquisition of the CSX corridor didn't happen until December of 2020. That had been, and both of these projects have been really long-term goals of the community. And we certainly appreciate the voters' support time and time again to support the design of these projects. What I did also fail to mention is that the CSX corridor in particular has been the subject of a number of grant requests. We did get $400,000 from the Mass Trails grant to acquire the corridor in 2020, and we now have a pending grant for $260,000. It would be a matching grant and reimbursable grant, but to support the topic of this request, and that is why we have in the title of the article also construction. So should we get the grant award, then these funds could potentially be allocated to constructing that first quarter mile. So, you know, these are projects, dynamic projects. As we went through the design process, there were a few elements that we recognized could really enhance the community by including them in the design. You know, some of them were not supported by MassDOT, but it was, you know, reviewed through the through the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail Advisory Task Force and through select board meetings that we would go ahead and pursue accessories and enhancements that we felt will be complementary to the rail trail and also really help enhance the community. But then there also are just cost escalations that happen over time.
Mr. Russo on the side.
Brother Russo, Juniper Road. I'm speaking as a private resident. I think just three points the hall should be aware of. First of all, the Framingham mayor in his State of the City address highlighted the pursuit of the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail as one of his main priorities. So this is something that Framingham is prioritizing and actively pursuing. The second thing is that there was a model for this that we just have to look one town north to see. Concord, although they designed and permitted their trail all the way to the town border, to the Sudbury border, they had a natural stop at the last major crossroad. I believe it was Powder Mill, if I remember correctly. So that's something in the Beth Sudemeyer might have more information on that. So we have a model of how to progress in this way just by looking one town north. And the last thing I'll say is that, you know, a lot of people look at Route 20 in the shops and they see some shops closing. And the best way to keep our downtown shops open is to give them foot traffic. Bikers get off their bikes, they go walking, they get hungry. If we want economic development, this is one of the best ways we could do it, given what's available right there. Thank you.
Being mindful of the time and that we have three more articles, we're going to vote now. The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 48 is majority. All in favor? Yep, you will be the last one. Please make your way to the microphone. Name and address, please.
Dan, yes, ma'am. Dandy Pompey, 35 Haynes Road. I have a question on the wording of the article. If we're moving on the words in the motion, the motion says, design and construction of the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail extension south of the intersection with Mass Central Rail Trail, or act on anything relative thereto. Now, I agree the discussion goes on and talks about stopping at Route 20, but the motion itself does not. Does that limit it to Route 20?
Town Council?
So by moving in the words of the article, we would be voting on exactly what the words in the article are, starting with the word to see and ending with the word anything relative thereto.
Ms. Sudemeyer, do you want to just clarify what specifically they're voting on?
Right, so it is the entire corridor, the 1.4-mile corridor, the design that is proposed, the full design or the 25% design is only to Route 20, but there will be data collected for the full corridor. So expenditures will transpire for survey, wetland delineation. There's real economies of scale whenever you hire someone to come out and do this work. It makes sense to have them do the full 1.4-mile corridor, not just a quarter-mile corridor. And so then we'll have the information that can inform the feasibility studies and the evaluations that and preliminary conceptual development and things like that. And this really mimics the process that transpired for Phase 2D as well, that started with feasibility studies, with survey and with data collection, and then later advanced to funding for the 25% design phase. So, you know, here we've incorporated the 25%, or if a DOT project, 25%, if not a DOT project, could be the full design just for the first quarter mile, but the rest of the work would transpire for the full 1.4 miles.
Well, those were too many words for my question. I thought my question was fairly simple. Do we stop? Are we doing design or planning beyond Route 20, the way this article is written?
Can you answer that question? Then we'll move on to a vote.
I'm just reading the wording.
Sure.
Again. Design and construction. So I guess it's conceptual design south of Route 20. So I think it's sufficient wording.
I'm not looking for sufficient wording. I think Town Council already answered my question, that we're moving in the words of the article, not in the description or the way anybody discusses it. So we're really not doing what the motion says.
Okay. I'm going to let Ms. Sudemeyer answer that question, and we're going to vote. So you can take your seat, please.
I'd welcome an opinion from Council if conceptual design meets the terminology in the motion.
Town Council?
If the question is which section of the rail trail that we're referring to, it's the extension south of the intersection with the Mass Rail Trail, and in my opinion, that would extend as far south as the town owns.
Okay. The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 48 is a majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. Thank you. All opposed, please raise your cards. Thank you. Article 48 passes by well more than majority. Article 49, motion by Chair Roberts.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. This is going to be a presentation by Historic District Committee member Taryn Trexler. Do people want to hear this presentation? Yes. Ms. Trexler.
Thank you, Madam Moderator and Town Meeting. My name is Taryn Trexler, and I am a member of the Sudbury Historic Districts Commission. Next slide. The Historic District Commission is respectfully requesting $50,000 in funding from the CPC under the Preservation for Historic Resources category for the creation of comprehensive and professionally developed design guidelines. The requested budget is based on discussions with preservation consultants, other municipalities going through this process, and the Massachusetts Historical Commission. Professional expertise will help grow the current guidelines into a more robust educational resource for homeowners to clearly communicate design principles and offer guidance for meeting the standards used by the HDC in awarding certificates of appropriateness and to facilitate an easier, faster, and more predictable review process. This request is a continuation of several years of thoughtful efforts to forward preservation planning in Sudbury. Next slide. Sudbury was one of the earliest towns in the Commonwealth to adopt the then-new preservation planning tool of local historic districts. We currently have five local districts encompassing over 350 properties dating from the 18th century to today. They are primarily residential in nature, although they also include several civic buildings and business areas. The HDC has jurisdictional review over exterior changes, new construction and demolitions to buildings and structures visible from the public right-of-way. District property owners seeking any exterior alterations from minor replacement projects to new construction and demolition must submit a detailed application to the HDC, participate in a public hearing, often with their project designers or other representatives, and receive a certificate of appropriateness before beginning. The HDC meets monthly and is not uncommon for larger and more complex projects to require multiple meetings and longer review times. Next slide. The HDC, so why now? The HDC is seeing an increased number in applications requesting guidance before and during the application process, and more frequent requests to incorporate new building technology materials and green energy systems. This also follows best practice recommendations and guidance from the state and local levels, including the State Historic Preservation Plan, the Sudbury Master Plan, and the forthcoming Townwide Historic Preservation Plan. Finally, the project will be well informed by the wealth of historic surveys completed by the Historical Commission. Next slide. Successful historic district design guidelines are a preservation management tool to reinforce and preserve the character of their respective historic districts. Compiled and used in conjunction with the local preservation ordinance and project review by the HDC, they help ensure that historic properties are protected and the new construction respects district character. Property owners are stewards of history for all of the town. Well-written and clear design guidelines provide them support for how to best preserve and maintain the essential features of their properties. They also help ensure the certificate of appropriateness permitting process is predictable and uniform for all applicants. Applicants who take the guidelines into account greatly enhance the likelihood of faster approval and review, saving both time and money. They also provide support for the commissioners themselves, particularly when reviewing complex applications and as new volunteers are appointed. It also provides the opportunity to add new information on the prescient topic of how historic preservation can work with sustainability and green energy solutions and how they can better prepare for the impacts of climate change. Finally, this can be a resource and reference tool for other town boards, commissions working with historic properties, staff, the town as a historic property owner themselves, and owners of historic properties outside of historic districts, of which there are many. Next slide. So let's take a look at some sample guidelines. We're highlighting here guidance on gutters, a fairly simple and straightforward project we often see on its own or as part of a larger project. This first slide is Sudbury's current design guidelines for gutters. Pretty quick, pretty easy. The next few slides look at design guidelines from local communities that have recently updated and expanded their guidelines, and wherever possible, we have included samples drafted with consultant assistance. Next slide. This one was drafted by the preservation consultants currently working on Sudbury's historic preservation plan, but done for the town of Wellesley. These guidelines discuss gutters in relation to historic roof lines and cornices, provide an overview of various appropriate gutter materials and styles, and include illustrative photographs and tips on maintenance. The next one is from Concord and includes a history of gutters over time. We've chose to highlight this one because it also includes specific recommendations and a checklist for how to prepare a successful application for this type of project. Next slide. This slide shows two sets of design guidelines developed by the same consultant working for different municipalities. Sorry, I think we're back a slide. There we go. You can see how each one was tailored to the priority of that particular community, including maintenance tips, and uses illustrations and photos as communication tools. And all of these are just examples. What's used for one town doesn't mean it will be used by Sudbury, but this is just to show the various approaches that the HTC has come across in our research. Next slide. Finally, this is the abbreviated suggested scope as presented to the CPC. This is based on conversations with various preservation consultants familiar with Sudbury and with the Massachusetts Historical Commission local government liaison, who is very involved in design guideline projects across the state. She shared sample RFPs with us so we can see how this type of project is typically organized and phased. In terms of content development, the project would be managed by the HTC, would be informed by the historic survey work, the final historic preservation plan, input from town staff and other boards, and of course, the property owners, businesses, religious and civic institutions, and residents of our historic districts. If approved, we expect the project to take approximately 12 months. Thank you.
The Finance Committee report.
Finance Committee votes to recommend not approving the article by a vote of 4-5.
Select Board report.
The Select Board supports 5-0.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 49? Okay. In the balcony, back middle, please.
Hello, my name is Chris Hager, 233 Knobscar Road, member of the Historic District Commission. I rise to support this article for development of professional design guidelines for use by homeowners and the Historic District Commission. Sudbury, as you all know, has a large number of historic districts with a lot of properties, and these guidelines would greatly assist homeowners when they decide to make changes to their historic structures, and would also help the volunteers on the Historic District Commission to work with these homeowners to reach approval of their projects. Historic district commissions generally have design guidelines, but many, if not most of them, are developed by people who are volunteers on these commissions who may or may not have the expertise in this area. This article would bring a professional consultant on board to develop these guidelines in greater detail and clarity, as Taryn just showed. My point of view is I have a lot of concern that in the absence of professional design guidelines, how will the Historic District Commission evaluate future changes proposed by property owners or provide advice and assistance to them related to climate change challenges? Examples of this could be, as Taryn pointed out, solar panels, geothermal pumps, or enlarged gutters or downspouts to handle increased rainfall in ways which will not negatively impact the historic building fabric or exterior appearance of these historic properties. Throughout Massachusetts, all historic district commissions are grappling with all these potential changes as a result of responding to climate change needs. Having professional design guidelines that will include design guidance for historic buildings being adapted to meet climate change modifications would be a win-win for the property owners, the local historic district commissions, and the residents of Sudbury who value these properties as they drive by them. I would ask that you support this article, which will help property owners deal with changes to their historic properties due to climate change and other changes they want to make to their properties. Thank you.
Anyone else on the balcony? Okay. Anyone on the main floor? Okay. In the middle, please.
Good evening. Frank Reap, 54 New Bridge Road. I was a member of the Historic Districts Commission for about 20 years, but I'm retired now. But I very much support this article. The resources that this would provide would make for a much more professional steering of the historic districts. It would be very beneficial to the property owners, to the homeowners, as well as to the board. And we never had the resources to develop tools to the level of professionalism that this would allow. So this is really a great opportunity that the funding is available to us. We really need to take advantage of it, so I hope the hall will support it. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Okay. Quantum of vote required for passage of Article 49 is majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. Thank you. All opposed, please raise your cards. Article 49 passes by well more than majority. Article 51, motion by Chair Roberts.
Move in the words of the article.
Can you just say that again? The microphone wasn't on.
Move in the words of the article.
Thank you. Is there a second? There is. Does anybody wish to hear a presentation on this article? Just want to make sure. I'm not seeing anybody wants to hear a presentation on this article. Okay. Finance Committee for report.
Finance Committee recommends approval. Vote of 9-0.
Select Board for report.
The Select Board supports 5-0.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 51? I see one in the balcony. I just want to make sure on the main floor. Does anybody wish to be heard? Okay, we will take the one comment in the balcony and then we'll move on to a vote.
Thank you, Madam Moderator, and thank you to the hall for indulging me in this little statement. Individuals who live with disabilities, whether those disabilities are visible or obvious or unseen conditions of a physical or mental nature, all garner great benefits from activities in, or even just quiet visits, sitting in, the wonderful outdoor places we all love so much here in Sudbury. We appreciate the Community Preservation Committee's willingness to devote funds to strong planning that will help put together maintenance and improvement projects to our open spaces, useful to everyone. We predict that the ADA transition plan of July 2021 will be helpful to the effort because it has reports on Broadacres Farms, Suwatara Liberty Lodge, Ledge, Davis Field, Featherland Park, Feely Field, Grinnell Field, Haskell Field, Heritage Park, High Sales and Willis Lake Access. It's not lost on the Commission on Disability that so many staff and volunteers on boards and committees are consistently considering accessibility in their discussions and actions. This mindset is the foundation for making Sudbury more and more inclusive and welcoming. Accessibility is a benefit to us all because the truth is we are all just one accident, one serious illness away from living with a temporary or permanent, a mild or severe disabling condition. In fact, we all age into into reduction in our abilities, and none of us wants to be kept away from the beautiful open spaces and the recreational opportunities in our community. The Commission on Disability voted unanimously in favor of recommending passage of Article 51.
Quantum of vote required for passage of Article 51 is a majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. Thank you. Anyone opposed, please raise your card. Article 51 passes unanimously. Article 57, Mr. Simon, please approach the podium.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Thank you, Madam Moderator. I move to indefinitely postpone Article 57.
All in favor of moving to postpone, I'm sorry, is there a second? Thank you. All in favor of indefinite postponement of Article 57, please raise your card. Any opposed? Article 57 was indefinitely postponed favorably. Before we take up the last article, I would once again like to thank all of the town staff who worked so hard to put this together. Their hard work ensured that you, the voters, were fully informed on all of the articles and that town meeting itself was conducted in a safe, effective, and professional manner. They are all excellent, and we could not do this without them. Thanks also to the town clerk and town council who made sure every step of the way that we have met our legal obligations. It was extremely helpful for me to have such clear and competent advice over the course of the meeting, and I very much appreciate their guidance. Finally, thanks to you, our citizen legislators, for caring about your town and participating in this process. Your ability to balance passion for the issues with a civility of tone was, as usual, exemplary and much appreciated by everyone on this stage. The town clerk has asked me to remind all recently elected and appointed officials that they should take the oath of office from her at the conclusion of today's meeting if they were not sworn in before this meeting. One last thing. According to Article 4, Section 1 of the town bylaws, it is the responsibility of the moderator to appoint members to vacant seats on the Finance Committee before the end of annual town meeting. This year, the terms of four members are set to expire and one member is stepping down. Two of the expiring members, Andrew Bettinelli and Sonny Parenti, wish to continue to serve. The application for the open seats on the Finance Committee was posted on the town's website as well as on social media. I was fortunate to receive more applicants than I had available positions. All the applicants were well qualified. In sum, I have made the following appointments. Andrew Bettinelli was reappointed for a three-year term. Eric Polk was reappointed for a three-year term. Sonny Parenti was reappointed for a one-year term. Mike Ferrari was appointed for a three-year term. Hank Surrett was appointed for a three-year term, and Colin Wang was appointed for a two-year term. Many thanks to Eric, Andrew, and Sonny for agreeing to continue on FinCom. This is one of the most time-intensive volunteer commitments one could make. I also wish to greatly extend my appreciation to Jean Nam, Ronald Brumbrack, and Scott Smigler, all of whom are coming off of Finance Committee, for all the hours they have put in on our behalf with FinCom over the years. Thank you. Article 58 is a citizen's petition, and I now recognize the citizens who wish to bring that forward. You're looking for the amended motion? Mr. Thompson, do you have this?
While that's happening, can we ask the hall for permission for one of the LS students to speak?
Yep. So I believe that one of the LS students wants to speak on behalf of the Environmental Club, and since they're a student, they're not a voting member, and they need permission of the hall. Is there any objection to an LS student speaking? Thank you.
Thank you. That's it, yeah. All right, thank you very much. I move in the words of the article, Alex Vi, 5 Wadsworth Road. I move in the words of the article with the sum of $130,000 to be transferred from free cash provided, however, that such sum shall be reduced by the sum of any gifts, grants, or other funds received for these purposes in authorized expenditures.
Is there a second? There is.
Thank you.
Do you have a presentation?
We do, yes.
Thank you.
All right, so we'll do an abbreviated version of this in the interest of everybody's time, and also just to leave some room for the Shanae to speak as well. But welcome to the end of town meeting. This is Article 58, and it's an important article about climate change and Sudbury's need to meet the climate emergency now. So climate change and effects are an emergency, and so we need to acknowledge the facts and the scientific consensus that climate change is happening now, and it's happening here, and it poses significant risks to us here in Sudbury, as well as to our fellow people all around the world. If you can see from these headlines, right, you'll see the wildfires, you'll see the strong tropical storms, the strong nor'easters, the record-setting temperatures that are followed just a few days by record-setting cold. But the thing I wanted to really point out is that all of these headlines are from the last 11 or 12 months, and they're all local headlines, right? So this is not about California wildfires. This is about wildfires here in Massachusetts. And the point I want to make is that climate change is here, it's now, and it's an emergency waiting for it to happen that needs urgent attention. So the good news is that Sudbury has many important things that we can do to ensure our safety and security and to do our part to reduce our effects on climate change. And this has been recognized time and time again by many important parts of this town government and by the citizens. So the master plan and the municipal vulnerability preparedness workshop findings extensively mention the need to address climate change. Our fire chief has spoken recently on the need to make continued progress on the hazard mitigation plan. Sustainability and climate change was voted as one of the top four goals by the select board this year, and thank you very much for that leadership on that front. And of course, we are part of a state of Massachusetts where the state has set climate goals of 50% greenhouse gas reductions by 2030 and net zero by 2050. So what this article does to accelerate progress on these important points is three things that you need for any complicated problem. First, it provides a mechanism for this town meeting to openly and publicly acknowledge that there's a problem, that climate change is here, that we need action, and that inaction has its own costs. Secondly, it puts into place a plan in order to tackle climate change, something that's focused on this specific goals and benchmarks, a clear analysis of costs and trade-offs so that we can make good decisions about what we want to do. We need to engage everybody, businesses, residents, town government, because this is an everybody problem. And we also need to make sure that all the benefits and all the costs accrue fairly across our community. And the third important component that this article does is it establishes a fixed and dedicated resource. So this would authorize the creation and fund the creation of a full-time sustainability director position for the town of Sudbury. It would be someone with a mandate to connect across all the many departments and boards and volunteers who all have roles to play in addressing this issue. A lot of residents are wondering what they can do, and so this sustainability director could serve as a powerful resource for sustainability in the community, businesses, and residents. And there's a lot of very sensible projects that need to be coordinated. And we know that our town staff and our town volunteers work extremely hard and their bandwidth is really saturated. And so adding an additional resource to focus on these projects and allow them to go forward is a good decision in our estimation. And finally, it's a world of many grants and opportunities, and we want Sudbury to make sure that we take advantage of everything that's on the table here. So how do we know sustainability directors work? We can look at the experience of other towns. So this is data from Natick. The bottom is staff salary and investments. And everything above the bar represents savings and revenues and earnings that come from that can be directly attributed to the work of the sustainability director in Natick. In 2019, the revenues were 12x salary. Even if you take away those sort of variable grants, the budgetable stuff was over $500,000 per year in persistent and budgetable monetary savings. And then just to switch towns for a bit, Acton has hired a new sustainability director in the last 6 months, and she has already secured about $250,000 in grants for the town. And so that results can happen quickly, and it can happen very effectively. And finally, I just wanted to end with a quick comment on how we're going to fund this. So we believe, based on our analysis of the market, that salary benefits and overhead for sustainability director for 1 year is about $130,000. Senator Eldridge has publicly committed to get $100,000 out of the state budget on the Senate side, and Representative Gentile has actually managed to get Sudbury $100,000 in the House version of the budget that is moving its way through the legislature. The Energy and Sustainability Committee has committed to $30,000, so this is a slightly old slide, but $30,000 to match the need out of their funds in order to fund the first year of this position as seed funding to get things going and allow the benefits to accrue. And then, of course, we are talking about an unprecedented free cash year where there's close, even after all of these other town priorities are met, there's close to $1 million left available in free cash. And we think that sustainability and thinking about the future of the town is a very good way of using those available funds. So we already discussed the DPW solar project earlier this evening, so I will just click through here and see some of the benefits of such a project that a sustainability director, you know, it's a very complicated project, lots of moving parts. A sustainability director with a mandate to move and coordinate, we believe very well likely could help move these projects forward more efficiently with the support of the existing town staff and volunteers and allow us to reap the benefits of projects like this sooner. So I will close there and I'll hand the mic over to Shani from the Ellis Environmental Club.
Hi, my name is Shani Dar and I live at 77 Hemlock Road. I am representing the Ellis Environmental Club. At our last meeting, we unanimously voted to endorse Article 58. As members of the next generation, our future will be determined by this critical vote. We have the opportunity to make a difference now. Sudbury is not in a bubble. We share the same air and water with our neighboring communities and the world. Our actions are not only for our own sake, but on behalf of all people. Despite being too young to vote right now, we are not too young to understand what is happening. We live through the effects daily, such as the drastic changes in weather, Sudbury water bans, which happen during the warmer seasons, and gradually rising temperatures due to the greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. Our hopes for our town and families are meaningless if we continue on a path away from a safe and stable climate. Climate change is happening here and now. This is an emergency that demands urgent action. It's not too late to make a difference, and your yes vote on Article 58 is an important step towards ensuring a safe and prosperous future. As Carl Sagan said, anything else you're interested in is not going to happen if you can't breathe the air and drink the water. Don't sit this one out. Do something. You are, by accident of fate, alive at an absolutely critical moment in the history of our planet. Thank you.
Report from Finance Committee.
Finance Committee votes to not approve this article by a vote of 1-7. While Finance Committee acknowledged the intent of the article and the thoughtful preparation of the citizen petitioners, the funding of a town position for a single year is not an appropriate use of free cash belonging in the operating budget, where our town charter provides the singular authority to hire and organize staff to our town manager.
Select Board for report.
The Select Board supports 3-2.
Is it a minority report from the Select Board, please, Mr. Cardi? It should be on.
Sure, Dan Cardi, thank you. Yeah, very similar to the Finance Committee report. I made this comment last night with a different article. I mean, there's a right way of doing things and a wrong way. And regardless of the intent here, which I do think is a good intent, I think you're going to hear from our town attorney in just a second that the hiring of staff is not the authority of the Select Board. It's not the authority of Town Hall. It's not the authority of a citizen petition. It is wholly the authority of the town manager. So at best, this is an advisory article. Okay. But again, you know, in addition to what Eric said, it's, you know, this is totally within the purview of the town manager to hire staff and decide what level that happens at.
Town Council.
Yes, it's just a further Select Board Member Cardi's
statement. If this article were to pass, $130,000 would be appropriated and set aside for the use as set forth in the article for the sustainability director position. But again, that is advisory by town meeting. It is within the executive branch, being town manager and the select board, to ultimately decide whether to actually fill that position.
At this point, we will open up for discussions. Who would like to be heard on Article 58? Okay, Mr. Surratt. Mr. Thompson, can you put his motion to amend up, please?
I can read it if you'd like. Can't there? Here we go. I move to amend Article 58 by replacing the title Sustainability Director with the title Sustainability Consultant. And to suggest that the consultant report to and be supervised by the Conservation Commission, that the first paragraph be reduced from 130 to 100,000, that being the amount of state money being made available. And then to say that this shall be a temporary position for FY23, shall continue beyond that if and only if funds other than town taxpayer funds are available. But the position may also be extended by annual town meeting in a separate article if the town votes to expend town funds to continue it.
Does that motion to amend have a second? It does.
May I be heard in support of the motion?
Sure.
I support completely the efforts to combat climate change at the state, federal, and local level. What I don't want to do is create a permanent bureaucracy at the director level that will become embedded in the town's financial structure so that if and when the position becomes meaningless, we can't get rid of it. A director would immediately be eligible to become part of the supervisory union. Once that happens, the town manager's ability to deal with that person is substantially curtailed. Now, what I'd like to see happen is we have a consultant. If the position works out and if the predicted savings occur, then at next year's annual town meeting, we can extend the position or even convert it into something else. But if it doesn't pan out, if it turns out that it's a financial boondoggle and that the town's efforts in this regard are mooted or made irrelevant by what's going on at the state or federal level, we're not stuck with it. So I see this as an experiment. I think it's a worthwhile experiment to try, but I don't want to embed this as a permanent part of the town's bureaucracy. I've spoken frequently about the levels of bureaucracy that we have in the town and a budget that now exceeds $109 million. I don't want to make that problem worse. Thank you.
Okay. Town Council?
Yeah, just to reiterate my prior opinion, regardless of whether this is framed as a sustainability director position or a sustainability consultant hired by contract, it remains under the purview of the executive branch of the town, being the town manager and the select board. And if the money's appropriated, it's their decision whether to fill it or not.
Anybody wish to be heard on the motion to amend? Yes.
Okay, so thank you, Mr. Surratt, for your thoughts. But with all due respect, we do not support that motion to amend. We think what this article proposes is actually quite a measured and modest action, and quite frankly, the minimum of what is required in light of the size of the underlying emergency. And so the request for $130,000 is actually based on a detailed market analysis that we've done of comparable positions in peer communities. And so given the nature of the job market and the fact that sustainability directors are in high demand, Sudbury does need to be able to offer competitive salary, benefits, and overhead to obtain the type of strong candidate that we can best bring the millions of dollars in savings and similar pollution reductions that smart sustainability and resiliency projects can bring. We also want to point out that climate is a long-term and complex problem, and our needs won't be well served by a short-term consultant who will show up, do some things, and then leave. Instead, our needs are much better served by a full-timer who can get to know our community, build the relationships, the lasting relationships across the town boards and departments and with residents that are needed, and most importantly, provide the continuity from planning all the way through the implementation. So climate change is an emergency. It demands urgent action. This is not the time to nickel and dime ourselves, and so we are talking about something that's 0.1% of the town budget, so we urge the hall to please reject this amendment. Thank you.
Is this on the motion to amend? Okay. Can you please bring a microphone there?
Bill Maniscalco, 126 Hemlock Road. I oppose this amendment. I think it's a ill-conceived effort to possibly try and accomplish the same thing as the basic article. We've already heard from town council that it is no more binding on hiring somebody or as a consultant than it would be hiring somebody as an employee. Also, as has been pointed out, you won't get a really good person as a temporary consultant, so it won't do very much for the town. And the other thing is that the claim that this is another expansion of the bureaucracy that will some way down the road not be needed ignores the reality of climate change, which is going to be with us for, unfortunately, even if we didn't emit one more molecule of carbon dioxide, thousands of years. So this is a long-term position, a long-term need.
In the balcony on the right, please. Keep speaking.
Shirley Hittig, 54 Wake Robin Road. I applaud the efforts of this article, and I think that by passing this article, we send a message to the executive branch.
Right now, we're just talking about the motion to amend.
I'm sorry, the amendment.
Yes.
Similarly, I think it sends a message to the executive branch that we are serious about having someone look into sustainability for the town. My question is, if the body decides to set aside this money and the executive branch decides not to fill the position of consultant, what happens to that money?
Town Manager Hayes?
There we go. All right. Thank you very much. So, Henry Hayes, town manager, any funds that are not expended as a result of a decision by the town meeting, if they're not expended, then they will eventually go back into and turn into free cash in future year.
Any other comments in the balcony on the motion to amend? Okay. One last comment on the motion to amend in the bottom middle, please. Please stand up.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Thomas Yeltsin, 167 Pratt's Mill Road. Mr. Sorette mentioned that this would be an experiment. And I guess for Sudbury it might be an experiment, but there are at least 30 municipalities that already have sustainability directors in Massachusetts or equivalent, including Concord, Acton, Framingham, Weston, Natick, Wellesley, Holliston, Newton, Brookline, Waltham, Winchester, Lexington, Arlington, Melrose, Cambridge, Somerville, Boston, Worcester, Salem, Beverly, and others.
Let's vote on the motion to amend. This requires a majority. All in favor of the motion to amend, please raise your cards. Thank you. All opposed to the motion to amend, please raise your cards. Thank you.
Zero in favor.
Okay. The motion to amend Article 58 fails by more than a majority. Let's move back to the discussion of Article 58. Who wishes to be heard on the main article? In the front center, please.
Hi, Meredith Gerson, 23 Hilltop Road.
I applaud your efforts and your bravery for standing up here tonight. I would like to point out that though the state legislators may be earmarking funds, that does not mean we will receive the funds. Often funds are earmarked and they don't translate into dollars received. So we could very well not receive any of that $100,000. And since we're talking about sustainability, Director, I'd like to talk about the sustainability of funding this position. This is funding just for 1 year, and the authority to hire resides at the executive level. So I'm interested in what conversations you've had with the executive branch on how to fund this going forward, and if there is an ability and desire to build this into an operating budget going forward.
If you can answer that question.
Yes, we. So we obviously we do understand that things can and do happen with the state budget, but so this is we are asking for free cash minus anything that does come out of the state budget, in order to make sure that there are funds available for this position, and we've had the pleasure of several conversations with Town Manager Hayes and several presentations to the Select Board, stating the sort of fact that if you have a high performing sustainability director, that they can very rapidly become a self-sustaining position through the savings and revenues that they generate through smart projects in resiliency and sustainability. And we look forward to continuing to work with all of the relevant members of town government to make sure that this position, after the seed money for the first year, is able to become a self-sustaining part of the fabric of our town.
Is it a very brief follow-up?
Yes.
Okay, you could bring a microphone back to her, please.
Meredith Gerson, 23 Hilltop Road. So I've heard that you've engaged in conversations, but I haven't heard that you've received a commitment to fill this position if this passes and a commitment to fund it in a sustainable way going forward. So that was what I was interested in learning about. And maybe the town manager could speak to that.
Mr. Hayes?
Thank you very much for the question. Thank you, town moderator Henry Hayes, Sudbury town manager. So first of all, I will say that temporary funds equals temporary position. In that the way that this is requested could potentially give the implication of a structural deficit because the funds that are requested are for $130,000. Once those $130,000 are expended, then they're expended. I understand the request. I value the intent. However, I have not made a long-term commitment regarding this. What I have been doing is having conversations with other communities in order to potentially get into an intermunicipal agreement. That way there can be offsets of costs in the future. There has been no commitment to have that solidified between the five other communities that I've spoken with because we're all at different levels. In the event that this is passed, utilization of the funds may happen and potentially we can get to an equal place with another community or two, and then decisions may be forthcoming from there. As far as the concept of self-sustaining, I'd be willing to yield to our finance director, if willing, regarding that. But the funds do not just turn into funds for the budget immediately for any savings. I yield.
Mr. Garvin, and then we're going to go to the black box.
Can you hear me now?
Here yes. We go.
Steve Garvin, 26 Bowditch Road. I would like to request that town staff provide planning board's position on this.
Town staff, planning
board. Adam.
Adam.
Duchesne.
Oh, there he is.
Adam Duchesne, Director of Planning and Community Development.
At their meeting on April 27, 2022, the Planning Board and Master Plan Implementation Committee voted unanimously to not support this warrant article. As the town's Master Plan Implementation Committee, they support the general principles of the warrant article, but at this time also feel there are better means to achieving the specified goals than creating a new singular full-time position. The Planning Board and Master Plan Implementation Committee feel the other possible means to achieve the desired outcomes of this warrant article should be discussed further, and other solutions should be explored as well. Sustainability is a critical issue for Sudbury, but there are better ways to achieve the goals of this proposal. For these reasons, at this time, the Planning Board and Master Plan Implementation Committee voted unanimously to not support this warrant article.
So we're now going to go to the Rogers Theater, where we can get a little bit more information about the legislature from Mr. Gento. Is his mic on? We can see him, but we can't.
Working, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Moderator. My name is Carmen Gentile. I live at 33 Surrey Lane in Sudbury. I'm the state representative for Sudbury. I also serve on the Council on Aging and the Sudbury Housing Trust, and formerly served on the Planning Board for 9 years. A couple of months ago, I received a letter from the Select Board signed by all five of our Select Board members requesting that I obtain $100,000 from the legislature for the position of a sustainability director. I was able to obtain that in the House budget. I will also tell you that our state senator was prepared to put that into the Senate budget. Now that I have it in the House budget, he doesn't need to do that. It will stay in the Senate budget, and I am virtually 100% confident that it will be in the final budget. And the reason I say that is because of the state of finances in the Commonwealth. We've never had a better financial condition. We have, after passing the House budget, we have $6 billion in the stabilization fund. Previously, if we had $2 or $3 billion, we thought that was very good. Additionally, we have an additional $2 billion in ARPA funds that we haven't decided what to do with. So we're flush with money. That $100,000 that I put into the budget will not be leaving it. And I would hope that this body, I support this, the motion under this article, and I urge you to pass it. Thank you.
Okay. Standing in the back, please.
Mark Sevier, 14 Everwood Road. The Green Energy and Sustainability Committee voted to approve this article, and I believe the vote was unanimous. And the Energy Committee is also committed to supporting this position if it becomes a reality for the town. And I guess we could all keep waiting and having discussions, and but somebody actually has to do something to make this problem, to change the trajectory we're on. And so whatever format that takes, you know, you have a bunch of young people in front of you who are going to live in a world that we don't really know what it looks like, and we don't really have a plan exactly of what to do for all the various things that we're so used to, the impacts we're so used to incurring on the environment. So both as part of the Energy Committee, Green Sustainability and Energy Committee, and as a citizen, I recommend passage of the article.
Is there somebody else over? Okay, let's you, sir, on the very end.
Yeah, hi. Kurt Deschler, 17 Spring Street. I had a question about the climate emergency declaration part of it, whether that has any legal significance or could any way be used to declare emergency powers, to circumvent discourse or due process.
Town Council?
If adopted, it would stand as a declaration and a resolution of the town meeting and be limited to that.
Thank you.
in the red, please, in the middle.
Thank you. Hi, Olga Faktorovich Allen, 19 Lakewood Drive. I'm a big fan of democracy. I, too, am not a big fan of bureaucracy, though, and bureaucracy is what got us the rail trail 40 years later. We don't have 40 years here. We have a climate emergency, whether we declare it or not. Major institutions are paying attention. Moody's is taking into consideration communities' ability to mitigate climate change and adapt to climate change in the municipal bond rating assessments. You already heard how many surrounding towns have already established sustainability directors and have comprehensive plans. We do not currently measure greenhouse gas emissions of this community. We do not have a coordinated approach. We do not have an optimal integrated approach across our departments to do this. Frankly, I'm shocked that our financial committee is against this because, as far as I'm concerned, it's your fiduciary responsibility to understand this community's climate risks, quantify, monetize them, and have a comprehensive plan to mitigate those risks. And so I fully support this article, obviously. This position will pay for itself almost immediately. In fact, I think in yesterday's town meeting, a resident noted an opportunity for MassSave for noise HVAC to get incentives that the town did not come up with by themselves. Right? There's massive grants and incentives out there that the infrastructure bill that is going to be pushing down hundreds of millions of dollars to states and municipalities to address this emergency. And we absolutely need a dedicated resource and a comprehensive way to do this. So I highly encourage my fellow residents to vote for this article. Thank you.
Okay. In the red on the end here.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. Lisa Kushak, 1030 Meadowbrook Circle. First of all, I want to say, Alex, this is not the first time I've seen you give this presentation. You did a wonderful job. And I want you to know I'm so incredibly proud of you. And I'm incredibly proud of all of these young people. And it's young people like this that inspire me to public service. And I hope inspire this whole hall. And it's my honor and privilege this evening to rise in support of Article 58. We should support this article as a community, as there is more than sufficient data demonstrating that the roll will pay for itself. Climate change is here. This is an issue that we should all get behind together. I believe that we have a responsibility to do everything we possibly can to address climate change. No matter what our political proclivities may be, we should all be able to get behind this investment in not just our community here in Sudbury, but in our world. Our young people and their children and their children's children are counting on us. Let's not let them down. Please support 58.
Ms. Roberts? No.
There we go. Okay, Jennifer Roberts. I'm speaking as an individual resident. I just wanted to point out to the hall, to any of you who have followed legislation in this area in the past year, the recent Massachusetts Next Generation Roadmap has set very aggressive carbon emission goals for Massachusetts, and individual communities will be expected to do their part and develop plans to meet these carbon reduction goals. In Sudbury, it will be one of those. And I think we're in a very fortunate position where we have some seed funding for this role. As mentioned previously, there is a fair amount of funding coming towards sustainability and climate change initiatives. So who knows, perhaps in year two or three, there would be additional seed funding that we could pursue. If not, we can have some serious conversations about how to fit this into the broader town budget. As Alex mentioned in his presentation, the town did some very serious research and plans with the Hazard Mitigation Plan and the Municipal Vulnerability Projects. Those projects need staff resources to work on them and carry them out, as was, in fact, mentioned by our fire chief at our last year's select board goal setting. And I believe that as a result, this position could perhaps also alleviate some of the roles, some of the work from other departments that have these responsibilities. So, but one of the most really fundamental things that I've observed is of this is the positive ROI that this role could bring. We don't have many roles like that, but in terms of bringing in grants and other funding opportunities, holistically from a budget perspective, it really could help offset the salary and benefits and be a win-win for our community. So thank you.
The gentleman behind you. This man was standing for a little while. I'm going to let him speak, and then we will move on to the question.
Bill Beniscalco, 126 Hemlock Road. As we've heard, you know, there is now a lot of money available for positions like this and grants for sustainability, and it's available now. 5 years from now, when we get around to doing this the right way, the Sudbury way, it may not be available. So we can count on somebody hired, a good person hired in this position, will bring in more than that person's salary. I think that's pretty certain, at least for the foreseeable future. And then one last thing I'd like to point out for people that are worried about their taxes, so they don't appear to have realized that where all this money is coming from. It's your state and federal income tax. And it will either go to us in these grants, if we hire somebody like this, or if we sit back, it'll go to some other town. That's your choice.
The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 58 is majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. Thank you. All opposed, please raise your cards. Thank you. Okay. Article 58 passes by well more than majority. At this time, no clapping. At this time, do I have a motion to dissolve this 2022 annual town meeting? Is there a second? All in favor? Any opposed? Thank you.